the lost fathers and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history of current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, and listen to the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. That's in the black belt /timeforanawakening, and listen to the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in their TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. You'll always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there with plenty of podcasts that you can download, other information that you can share with your friends, and some of the new programming that's there on the site that you can download at later times, listen, or even share again with your friends. More and more things will be added. A lot of the changes have been made, but we're going to be adding more content all of the time. Make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, special guest will be joining us. I haven't seen him in quite a while, and I'm happy to have him back on the program after quite a few years. Activist, internet radio host of the program War on the Horizon, the Irritated Genie, is with us this evening. And we're going to do some interesting discussion, and you can be a part of it by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back. Time for an awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, we usually have our community announcements or anything of that nature with my right arm and co-host Brother Richard, but he had a family emergency that he had to deal with, so I'll be flying solo this evening. Maybe during one of the commercial breaks I'll try to reach out and find some of those announcements so I could make during the course of the program tonight. Our special guest that has been joining us, that will be joining us. I haven't seen the brother in a couple of years, but we'll talk about that when he comes on. Activist, internet radio host of the program War on the Horizon, the Irritated Genie, is with us this evening. Hey, brother, how are you?
I'm fantastic and honored to be here.
I'm happy to have you back with us. It's been a while since you've been with us, man, and I haven't seen you. I think it was a couple of years ago when we brought Ashra Kwesi here over there on City Line Avenue. That's the last time I physically saw you.
Yes, sir.
And one of the brothers that have been on, that have been a contributor to the program for the past, I guess, 3 months, Brother Nathaniel Jordan, is in your area, and he told me that he's been talking with you. He's working with Rock Newman to kind of change his health and his diet. So he's right there with Jim Washington, and he told me that he was kind of fellowshipping with you down there.
Yeah, I just went and I got a little bit of an echo in the background.
No, you go. Cool. You're right. Mm-hmm. I hear you good.
No, I hear it on this side.
Okay.
All right, and yeah, that's much better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went down there, and I went to videotape a presentation he did yesterday. And to be quite honest with you, and I've been doing this for a long time, and this is an honest assessment, it's the best health lecture discussion I've ever heard in my entire life. I've heard a lot, but this brother, I think what he does is he's so good because he can deal with the everyday person. I'm not a health guru. I deal with other areas. And so he made it simple for a person like me to not be able to make an excuse for not eating better. And I think he's a valuable asset to what you're doing, and all of our people really need to hear this brother.
Yeah, he's a good man. You know, I want to get him more and more than he is, but he does a kind of monthly segment on Time for Awakening. But I'll work with him because I want to kind of get him a little more frequently. And plus, I'm trying to do some things and expand the program. So we're going to hopefully get some things going up here in this 2018 calendar year where we can bring some folks in, to talk with our audience up here in Philadelphia where they can see them live instead of just listening to them on the air.
Absolutely.
Listen, I wanted to reach out to you because – a couple of weeks ago, and I've always had respect for Cynthia McKinney because of her work when she was dealing with some of these folks right in their halls of, quote-unquote, the judiciary and the executive branches, when she was right there fighting for our people among the den of thieves, so to speak, or the den of iniquity. But I gained a whole new level of respect for Sister McKinney when she was on the program 3 weeks ago, and she told, because a caller asked her a question in reference to the black, and I'll take a phrase from Black Agenda Report, the black misleadership class, and how the Jewish lobbies and Jewish, and I'm not going to use the term Jew, I'll use the term Jewish, has an undue influence over black elected officials. And she went on to talk about the undue influence that they have over black elected officials. And she also stated to the listening audience, if they haven't seen the secret relationships between blacks and small hats, that they need to see the video and talk about it among their clubs and in their churches, their congregations, their temples and mosques. But she recommended that everybody sees it. And I just gained a whole new level of respect for her, because listen, you don't hear any former or present elected official talking like her, and you wouldn't hear any past elected official even mentioning those type of things for our people to talk about and listen to and discuss. But that made me reach out to you even more to get you on here. And I know that you can put me in touch with one of the brothers that did a lot of research in that video. But right now I got you on tonight, and we'll talk about this among ourselves. I want you to go back on some of the things that she stated. Now, we don't have to necessarily go back to our ancestors being brought here, because we know there was a Jewish heavy Jewish involvement in our ancestors being brought to these shores. But let's talk about some of the movements of our people and talk about the abolitionist movement, and then we'll bring it on up to certain areas of our people trying to make movements in this country, and talk about the Jewish influence that was present, that seemed to have been always present among our people in any movements that we had.
Okay. Wow, that's a loaded question, because the most interesting thing about it is that this white so-called Jewish influence has been here and deeply entrenched in trying to maintain a system where black people are subservient and are not self-determining, thus being able to pit African people and the Anglo-Saxon European at odds with one another while they take full control of the entire society. So this has been their modus operandi since the time of black enslavement in this country. In fact, one of the problems they had historically is that being in Europe in an all-white environment, once the white Anglo-Saxons began to recognize their modus operandi and how they had taken over the bank, took over their societies, were promoting degeneracy and all kinds of forms of wickedness, sexual immorality, filth and indecency in media, and basically subverting the society in Europe, it was easy for them to be identified because, wow, okay, now we see who's behind it. And then they got put out of most of the countries in Europe, some of them two or three times, because of this kind of behavior, usury financially, exploitation, cheap goods, selling cheap goods, just various different things that they do throughout history. Once they got to America, they were in a very unique situation. They had another group of people, African people, who made up a large percentage of the population who could be used as the buffer zone to distract attention from their evil intentions and keep the white Anglo-Saxon masses of America concentrating on hatred with us. And then they would fuel us and give us support only to the degree that it would help us stand up enough to fight with the Anglo-Saxons. And what they would always do, and they still do, is play both sides of the fence. They'll be sponsoring and paying for black so-called civil rights groups or black groups that are against the state. But on the other side of the coin, they're funding and financing and fueling white racist sentiment and hatred towards black people. They're the attorneys on both sides, the judges on both sides, and more importantly than anything, the finances of both sides. And in doing that, they keep us distracted in fights with one another while they pretty much take over the entire society. So if we go back to abolitionism, it was really a black movement it started, really, abolitionism in the sense of black people trying to work to free ourselves from enslavement started when the first black person was put on the first ship and landed on the first shores of the Americas. We were always trying to get out of this situation. But in the 1830s or so, when abolition as a movement really started to get strong, what the Jews who were, I mean, they were really the ones making the money off of the cotton industry, off the sugar industry, particularly cotton. They were the ones with the huge plantations. They were the ones that controlled the economic interests of slavery. So they did not want slavery to end. In fact, when we got to the point of, when we get down to the Civil War, we get to talk about that. We'll talk about the second in command of the Confederacy was Judah P. Benjamin, who was considered the brains of the Confederacy. And Brother Body Shot talks a lot about that in the secret relationship between black leaders and small hats. But in the abolition movement, black people were very simple. We wanted slavery to end. It wasn't this thing about trying to love no Europeans or convince Europeans that what they were doing was wrong. We wanted to organize, and we were organizing for the purposes of overthrowing the system of slavery. So you have people like Henry Highland Garnett and various other brothers and sisters.
Yes.
They had organized upwards between 10 and 50,000 black people in the North who were going to go and independently seize the South with guns and weapons and try to overthrow the system of slavery ourselves. These were free men and women. These were our brothers and sisters in the North that said, we have to help our brothers and sisters in the South get free, and we're willing to do that as a military organized unit. And we're talking about thousands of men saying we're ready to go, and thousands of women supporting those men, working and doing whatever they do, washing dishes, whatever they're doing to finance our own liberation. It was the white so-called Jews, primarily, who jumped into the abolitionist movement. People like Charles Sumner, who's a good friend of Frederick Douglass, was one of the early integrationists, who began to jump in and say, well, it's not about being a military siege. What we really need to push for is integration. You need to be able to go to schools with whites and love whites and marry whites and things of this nature. Now, to a large degree, these Jews who operated, or white so-called Jews, who operated in an environment where they were an exclusive culture. They didn't let everybody be part of their culture. And they were very secretive about the way their culture operated. What they were intending to do was to create confusion, because the problem they had is that if black people successfully separated ourselves from the whites, then it was much easier for the whites to see and identify them. But what they knew is that if they convinced us that what we wanted was not independence and freedom, but we wanted to sleep with white females and marry and interbreed with them, they knew that that would create the kind of conflict that would have whites constantly upset with black people and black people constantly upset, and it would prevent us from being self-determining, and that would be the illusion or the confusion they could create to continue to rule the society. So they began to enlist people like Frederick Douglass, who was a great orator in a fight against slavery, but they began to enlist him in the battle to stop black people from talking about independent warfare and independent progress of our own, and begin to bring us in where we were under the control of the larger white establishment, largely Jewish, who could then, we could be used in the interest of supporting their interests as opposed to our own interests.
You know what, let me, because I'm going to jump in here and talk about this, and I want your opinions on this. See, because these conversations that we're having, it needs to be had in places where our people are. And when I say places where our people are, I'm talking about these churches, temples, mosques, wherever our people are. And I don't want to disparage anybody's faith, but when they're hooping and hollering and praising, it needs to be time out for serious discussions. Now, let's look at, because you mentioned Douglass, but it was other people during that time. You mentioned Henry Highland Garnett, one of the fathers of maybe Pan-Africanism was Martin Delaney. Now, let's look at that period, brother. And because now we can look at it in retrospect. But, you know, it was a perfect storm for Jewish people at that time. And when I say a perfect storm, they had a ready-made population by and large to be used. And I'm saying that to say this. The example you gave about Garnet and them rallying black people in the North, a lot of that was virtually unknown to our people in the South because of the ignorance of our population. When I say ignorance, being forced not to be, being not allowed to read and not allowed for different literature to even seep down into those Southern areas, similar to what happened with David Walker and his book. Any things that came out, they tried to make sure that blacks didn't get word of it, whether it was Haiti, get word, get any literature. If some blacks could read, share it with others. So some of our ancestors were ignorant at that time because they didn't know the language. So a lot of messages couldn't really be spread in a large degree to any of the plantations. And plus, you had people that were escaping, similar to Douglas. I think when he escaped, he beat the hell out of that slave master and escaped. So when they were moving about for their lives in the forest and other places, sometimes some of them was aided by white folks. And that, I believe, that jaded their opinions in reference to the white folks at that time. They seen where they could get aid from some of these people, and some of these people may have been their friends, even though some of these people had ulterior motives all along. Give me your opinion on that.
I think you're absolutely correct. What happens is a few things. One, we were trained through Christianity to see whites as good and see ourselves as bad.
Okay. All right.
This is almost a universal training in the South that from the day you're born, you believe that they're gods and we're devils. Then on top of that, like you said, the few whites that may have aided for whatever their own purposes were, aided black people during that time. It lends itself to black people believing, see, you know, maybe what I learned growing up is true, and maybe there are some good whites.
Okay. Okay.
And then there's the other piece that you got to add in there for folks like Frederick Douglass in particular.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a historical reality. He was a mulatto. And his the master's wife on the plantation helped him learn how to read and supported him.
Yes.
So he was aided and abetted in that situation, and also not only was he mulatto, I mean, many of us had people that raped people in our family, so we're not blaming him for that in any way. But we're talking about the political perspective of the mulatto historically.
Okay.
Has been of a privileged group who have assisted. Now, we're not talking about every single one, but we're talking about in general.
In general, yeah.
Have assisted and aided, abetted whites in domination and maintaining domination and control over black people, no matter to what degree it has been. Some of them were just all the way in favor of slavery, some were against slavery, but in favor of a caste system where light-skinned mulattoes were privileged over and above the dark masses of our people. And no matter how you look at it, the history has been that, in general, mulattoes have aided and abetted in the maintenance of the system of racism and white supremacy. So when you add all those things together, we've had a number of black people during that time, Frederick Douglass being one of them, who were used by people like George Stearns. George Stearns is the one who actually financed recruiting. And here's the interesting part about it. Brother Body Cast talks about it in the video, Secret Relationship Between Black Leaders and Small Hats. He talked about how in the 1840s or 50s, they were having a meeting to decide whether or not they were going to go, the black masses were going to go down and free our people in and of ourselves militarily. In that meeting, they were just about to vote to go down there and go to war. And it was Frederick Douglass who was basically, you know, working with white abolitionists, who went in and said, hey, wait a minute, no, we can't do this. We can't go down there and fight like this. And so Henry Island Garnett gave a brilliant speech, and they debated for like, I think it was 4 to 8 hours. And essentially, Frederick Douglass used all of his eloquence to talk our people, they lost by one vote, to talk our people out of going for independent warfare in the attempt to free our people from enslavement in the South. Now, he turns around when the Civil War happens, and pretty much, I mean, he doesn't use verbatim, but almost verbatim, steals Henry Highland Garnett's speech and takes the basic tenets of the speech, we should say, not steals it, but he takes the basic tenets of the speech where Henry Highland Garnett would say, we need to fight for ourselves, and under the bequest of George Stearns, who was a white so-called Jew, who was doing the recruiting and the financing of bringing the black people into the Union so that the Union could win the war, now Frederick Douglass, on their behalf, goes and argues to black people, hey, we've got to get into this war and fight for the Union. So you can imagine many of the people during that time say, well, where's this eloquence you're talking about now about Nat Turner? That's what Henry Highland Garnett was talking about when we were talking about going and fighting for ourselves. But now all of a sudden that you're working with the whites, now we should fight for them. Here's the difference in that. If we'd have fought for ourselves, even if we didn't beat every state, let's just say we won the state of Mississippi. What that would have meant would have been the state of Mississippi was ours. In other words, when you independently act on your own behalf to make a military move on some region, if you win, the region is yours. That means the gold is yours, the land is yours, the cotton is yours, the industries are yours, everything is yours because you won. When we were co-opted into joining the Union under the leadership of the Europeans, it's not only that they could mistreat us and underpay us, but ultimately, we win the war, and what do we get out of it? Nothing. Our brothers and sisters in the South, yes, they got physical chains removed from enslavement, but they didn't get anything when they left, and now you have nothing. And some brothers and sisters ended up, and I'm not saying that we're not glad that it ended slavery. I want to be clear. We're glad that it was over, but we're just saying when you fight in that way, you're not able to give your brothers and sisters anything. They just leave now, and they're starving, and they got to try to figure out how to survive through that process. And that's how the small heads operate. They get what they want, or they use our energy in their interest. And generally speaking, because we're not understanding of what they're doing, and like you said, we think that they're our friends, because they give us some money, and they say some nice words about how intelligent we are and how smart we are and how we're a real, what's the word they use? We're a real, not advantage for your race, but...
A credit. A credit.
Great example. Yeah, you're a great credit. You're a great credit to our race. These things, because we value them and see them as these standards of achievement, mean so much to us that we're easily manipulated into being used against our own interests.
Okay, you couldn't have said it any better. Okay. Now, you know, when you talk about the Jewish influence on our people, and you, because you started with abolition, we'll bring it up to around the period of the Civil War. It's clear that if you look, and especially in the documentary that that you and the brothers put together, it's clear that you can see, and you mentioned it earlier, of playing both sides of the fence. It's a weird strategy. It's not a weird strategy, but it shows a strategy that these people study what they're going to do. They study how they're going to approach us, and they approach us in that methodical fashion, and they have a plan A. They have a plan B and a plan C if it doesn't work. So it's clear that these people study our movements and how they want to approach us. And in the past, and even presently, we don't study Europeans, study their approaches, and study how we're going to deal with them. And it has hurt our people, and it has worked to our detriment. But we'll talk about that because that still goes on now. But let's move it up to the period of the Civil War, because I think that you pointed out, you and the other brother pointed out in the documentary, that you had so-called Jews that was on both sides of this fence, that was working with the Confederacy and also working with abolitionists and the Union to free our people. And listen, anybody who studied that situation knows that when we got into that Civil War, that black people turned the tide and saved this Union. But go ahead.
Right.
Go ahead and point some more things out. We're going to take a break, I guess, in about 5 or 6 minutes, but you got some time before we take a break.
All right. So the interesting thing, and what you said is truly their modus operandi. One of the things that the white so-called Jews do that's different than the Anglo-Saxons, the white so-called Jews are going to be on every side of an argument because their objective is to profit off every side. And no matter which side wins, they're going to want to be able to say, see, we're your friends. And they just morph over more to whoever wins as if they were your friends the whole time. So they want to make sure that everybody has some type of something that they feel like they owe the so-called Jew, so that if you get power, they can always pretend that they were your friend. So during the Civil War, we have to understand, the second in command behind Robert E. Lee in the Confederacy that ran the entire Union, and he was literally called the brains of the Confederacy, was Judah P. Benjamin. He was a homosexual Jew who basically was the one that was the archetype of the different approaches and strategies that the South would use to try to maintain or to secede from the Union and create its own independent nation, a slave-owning, slave-controlling nation. So we bring that up to say the Jews were absolutely, positively, 100% deeply entrenched in trying to keep slavery as an institution in America, keeping primarily black people enslaved in that system. While at the same time, on the other side, the ones who were financing black people to support the Union were also Jews. Now you say, well, why would they be supporting both sides of the war? Well, because they were doing exactly, why would they be supporting? Because they were doing exactly that. They were financing both sides of the war, meaning they were the ones that everybody had to buy weapons from and bullets from and uniforms and basically the industry of it. So it didn't really matter so much at the end of the day who won. Even though Jews would be, white so-called Jews would be on whichever side they were on. But overall, in the aggregate, it didn't matter because they would make out like bandits financially.
They would be the
big
winners.
No matter who won.
Okay. Okay.
here's the interesting thing. When they actually won the war and Grant became the president, one of the interesting things, one of the first things he did was look at the financial corruption of Jews in the government, who he said were financing both sides of the war. And he said, he literally wrote a memorandum, I forget the number, and said, from this point forward, Jews will be banned and must be expelled from the Treasury Department. This is the President of the United States after the Civil War says, these individuals are so crooked that they cannot be, one of the generals, I think it was Grant that did it, Ulysses S. Grant, that did that document after the Civil War was won.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're joining conversation with activists and internet radio host of War on the Horizon. The Irritated Genie is with us in conversation this evening. Get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kamban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Bobby, hit me DVD in the garbage, man. You don't remember that water, man?
Yeah.
Speak to him, Lord.
Somewhere, a black man's eyes wells up in the dark. Away from his peers. Away from his queen. Away from his offspring.
That's right.
Coming to a fork in the road and not realizing that he cannot stand still. Cause sometimes life isn't about right or wrong, just left or right.
Gotta keep it moving.
The stress, the pressure, the respect of your woman, the admiration of your child. Almost obsolete as the breadwinner when the flower is provided by the enemy. If your only resource is labor, or at least that's what they'll pay for.
Slavery, God.
What happens when they can get it for cheaper?
Man up.
Have we got an amnesia as to what a man is and what a man does?
Like power.
Is the possibility of death too great? Is the fear of physical confinement hindering your proper judgment?
I just got locked up last week.
See, death is a guarantee. And you might just get knocked just because.
That's word.
Now, your woman condescends, cause she just can't understand how she could get a job, but you cannot.
You gotta create our own job.
And look at the places you go, and the people you fraternize with, cause they say a lot about your character. And whether you are who you say you are.
Soldier.
White supremacy has struck a deadly blow, but our vital signs persist. When we know better, an excuse is just an excuse.
Hurry up, stop talking.
And whether you fully comprehend or not,
Lord,
you're a man.
Stand up, let them know, Lord.
And manhood is your birthright.
Stand up.
It is your job to know what that entails, black man. And it cannot be defined by our natural adversary. For his ways are not ours. Do we allow our boys to be feminized?
Hell no.
Do we allow our girls to be masculinized?
Hell no.
Because sheep get on the defensive? Or do we muster manhood and stand firm on our principles?
Stand strong, Lord.
I leave that up to you, brother. But as you dry your face and contemplate your next move, keep in mind the devils love doubt. And if you don't know how to be a man, they will show you how.
It's wartime.
Cypher!
Peace. From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with my friend, activist and internet radio host of the program War on the Horizon, the Irritated Genie, is with us this evening. And we're talking about an interesting dilemma that has been with us for quite a number of centuries. Why has a great deal of our attempts to unify or create unifying movements failed or stalled? Is it all on us? Or is it other forces that work to ensure the failure of our efforts? You can join the conversation on that this evening by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother, let's bring it up to a little past the Civil War during this period, or a little after Reconstruction. And our people had been released from the chattel enslavement. The chains was off our arms and shackles off our ankles, and we started going into areas, establishing towns. You still with me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. We started going into areas, establishing towns, creating commerce, flourishing towns. So here we go again with what you have been laying out. Somebody said in their plans, we got to get out in front of this. So this is the period of Booker T. Washington and later on the development of W.E.B. Du Bois. And something that you point out, again, you and the good brother in the documentary, that it was forces that you term in the documentary Small Hats that was involved on both sides of this issue that ended up pitting black folks against black folks. But the whole thing was based on our people having an independent mentality to start their own. But it was schemes by these people to get out in front of this movement. Talk about it from your perspective.
Sure. So,
first people that I
mentioned is named Mary White Overton. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, the first people that I mentioned is named Mary White Overton. She was a white so-called Jew. She was the one that actually started what they call the Niagara Movement, which was what W.E.B. Du Bois was part of. So what happened is, when you have people like Booker T. Washington who make the decision, it's time for us to be independent economically so that we can write our own ticket. We don't have to work for somebody else, and if we do, we can charge them what we want to charge them because we're independent and have skills. So he starts using his sophistication to develop that. Later on, Brother Garvey would come to this country to meet that brother, but Booker T had passed before Garvey got here. But what happened is the small hats saw African people building all these independent communities, developing these communities. We had our own grocery stores, our own farming. We had our own malls and planes and plumbers and pretty much our own infrastructure. And because we had just come out of centuries of enslavement, we totally controlled skilled labor. We were the most skilled people in the society.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, they realized that the white so-called Jews realized that we control the economic base in this country where millions of dollars are flowing through, but also because we were separate from the whites in the South and we had our own infrastructure, that it would be very difficult for them to come in and overthrow our economic situation, but more importantly, for them to take total control of the society, because you had the whites on one side, black people in our own communities going our own direction, looking at independent action, and ultimately looking at people like Brother Garvey, how do we take Africa and the black people in America and around the world and unify so that we can make Africa independent and strong so that we can now look out for the interests of African people internationally. That becomes a huge problem for the Jew, because once there's black people that are independent and whites who are independent, then the whites can look within their own construct of their community and see who's running everything, and they'll see that the white so-called Jews have them under their net. So the Jews cannot ever afford for that to happen. So the idea is we must keep black people dependent. So what they did, Mary White Overton, they started the Niagara Movement, and they had people like W.E.B. Du Bois be part of it. Later, that would grow into what would be called the NAACP, which is a Jewish organization. People don't understand this. Black people don't understand. In the charter of the NAACP, one of the things it said is that you can never own land. So what were they trying to do? The object of the NAACP was to be a counter force to Booker T. Washington and other independent black self-help movements, because the white so-called Jews' idea was, if we can take the large masses of black people and use them as the battering ram to break down barriers to Jews in this country, gaining full control of the country, they'll be our cannon fodder. And while they're out there getting shot and killed in the streets, any of the industries that we're being blocked out of, whether it's government, whether it's finance or business, or whatever they're being blocked in the society, we'll steamroll that, and then they'll have, by being in control of the judges and the financiers and the organizers and the strategists of both sides, they'll be able to create a scenario where they can take all the benefits from what we do, and then we'll be dependent, and then pretty much we'll be back in a system of enslavement. That won't happen if we have our own schooling system, if we have our own grocery stores, if we have our own farming. So they have to deconstruct all of that. So they create the NAACP, and in the charter they make sure that they're pushing black people in the right direction. You can't own any land. It's all Jews that started, and they had a few black people, W.E.B. Du Bois and maybe one other person, were the only black people there when it started. When they began to recruit other black people, people like Ida B. Wells Barnett quickly looked around and said, oh, wait a minute, I see what this is. This is some white folk trying to tell us what to do. She dropped out immediately because she saw what it was. But what ended up happening was when Brother Garvey got here and started getting the masses of black people to realize after the Red Summer, with all the black people getting lynched and murdered, hey, we need to do for ourselves and we need to reach out to Africa and become independent. Nobody was listening to Booker T. Washington, and they weren't listening to the so-called the Negro elite, the ones who were controlled by the whites. They were thinking about let's do it for ourselves. And it was a real strong, collective, organized push towards us doing for ourselves. This is when the Jews went into heavy action. They organized the black homosexuals, Gay Philip Randolph, his boyfriend was Baird Rustin, and then the other Negroes, William Monroe Trotter, and the various other Negroes who were interested in being integrated with whites. They wanted to date white females. They wanted to be accepted in the white construct. And they wanted to be the elite over black people. But black people weren't listening to them because they weren't providing anything for black people. They were listening to Garvey and others like Garvey who were actually building things in the black community. So the Jews financed these other groups and actually worked with the federal government, the MID at the time, the military something department, MID. And basically what they were doing, it was a forerunner to the CIA. They were making sure that they helped the government prevent black people from building independent movements in our own interest, because they wanted to control our direction and use our physical force, which you later see in the civil rights movement with the marches and stuff, to push down barriers to them as opposed to push down barriers to for ourselves. So the Marcus Garvey Must Go movement was started by the Jewish-controlled and financed black leadership, or pleadership in this country, or misleadership in this country, like the A. Philip Randolphs and the various other individuals, but W.E.B. Du Bois, to bring down Garvey. The judge on Marcus Garvey's trial was Julian Mack. He was a member of the NAACP. Joel Spingarn, that we talk about people getting a Spingarn Award and all kind of schools and school in Washington, D.C., a high school named after Spingarn. He was one of the primary individuals trying to undermine the Garvey movement and the black self-help movement in favor of Jewish control over black affairs. So the entire Garvey movement, the UNIA, Universal Negro Improvement Association, which is the largest single organization and movement black in the history of the Western Hemisphere, which had over 5 million people who were members worldwide, all reaching all the way over to Kenya and Africa, in Asia and South America. They had chapters, they had 50 chapters in Cuba. We're talking about a massive, colossal movement where black people had a consensus of doing for ourselves, was disrupted by the orchestration of the white so-called Jews, the black collaborators that you so eloquently spoke of before, who were primarily integrationists and homosexuals. It's almost, you cannot talk about black collaborators without talking about three groups: integrationists, homosexuals, and mulattoes. Historically, throughout the history of this country, it has been consistent. The three groups of black people that are consistently participating in racial treason and preventing us from being independent and doing for ourselves are the integrationists, invariably, the homosexuals, invariably, and the mulattoes. And it is still the exact same to this very day. It has not changed. And all of them tend to be controlled financially by the white so-called Jews who destroyed or helped destroy Brother Garvey's movement.
Let me say something before I go to a couple of these callers and get your opinion on it. During that period of, the death of Booker T and W.E.B. was kind of coming into his own during that period, and you had Garvey there. Historically, and looking at that now, almost 100 years later, it was easy. Even though W.E.B. Du Bois was an intelligent man, and you could see that his life kind of came full circle later in his life, because I think that he realized what was going on, but we'll deal with that when we come to it. I think it was easy for some of those men to end up being used, because the money that was given to them during that period, and plus, just like you said, the reason that Europeans, by and large, created the mulatto caste was to be a buffer between the straight-out African descendants on the plantation and them. They were created to be like a buffer group. So when you had some of those men talking about Garvey's physical appearance and that he was dark and he's that and this, you know, you had that was, you almost couldn't believe that you had intelligent black men talking about another brother's physical appearance, but you could see where that ignorance stemmed from. But go ahead, and then we'll take a couple of these callers.
Yes, sir. And it's one of the tragedies in the history, really, of the African world.
Yes.
They used to actually call the UNIA, instead of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, the ugliest N-words in America. And it was because, at that time, the mulattoes, or the very, very light-skinned black people, and it's not all of them, there were very many, there were black people who were so light they could pass for white, who never, ever, ever sided with whites, and were some of the most dedicated people to black people that you can imagine, like Henrietta I'm forgetting her name right now. Brother Garvey talked about it all the time. I'm drawing a blank. Henrietta.
Historically, we noted a lot. Yeah, you're right. Go ahead.
But in general, the reality of it is that W.E.B. Du Bois, like many before him, the light-skinned, mostly mulatto, not just light-skinned, but mostly mulatto groups, wanted to have a caste system. They knew that they wouldn't necessarily be white. They understood that. What they wanted was a privileged position where they were the ones who were respected by whites to rule over the black masses and bring more light-skinned types like themselves or half-mulatto types like themselves into positions of power. And what happened when Garvey, dark-skinned, brilliant, island, thick accent-having black man, was able to ignite the masses of African people here, and he said, I don't care if you're a sharecropper, I don't care if you stole, I don't, whatever you do, we're going to do it for our people. Let's go. Stand up and be proud of who you are. And the people galvanized and gravitated towards him. These primarily mulatto slash lighter-skinned blacks, and some integration, but particularly these lighter-skinned ones, were so insulted that the dark-skinned, brown-skinned masses of our people would follow a leader who didn't get the approval from the whites and who wasn't light-skinned and didn't have wavy hair. The texture of the hair on his head wasn't the same as the texture of the hair on his eyebrows. He was a natural African black man and proud of it. They were resentful because they had built their life and their economic livelihood. W.E.B. Du Bois, he had a job. He was employed by white folks to undermine black people. Now, whether he knew that's what he was doing at the time or not, he eventually learned it by the end of his life. At any rate, he knew he was an employee, and he knew when he didn't do what they told him to do, they would threaten to fire him. So he was also jealous, and many of those groups were jealous because, yes, they could get paid to be spokespeople for black people from whites as long as they said what the whites wanted them to do. But now they're looking at a black man who doesn't have the degree that they have, but is generating his own income, has one of the largest circulations of a paper in the country, and is going around the world and is revered as almost, you know, one level below the god. He was called the Moses of his race. And these are different competing groups and institutions who weren't part of UNIA, but they loved Garvey and his movement so much. They were like the Moors or the Nobles Reali. They called him the Black Moses. He's the Moses of our people. He's the one pulling us together. And so they were so jealous, envious, and hate-filled that they set aside to destroy him. And we still have that kind of white supremacist personality going on in our race today.
Let me grab a couple of these calls that's been on hold, and then we'll get to some of the ones that just came on. Let's go to 919. Area code 919. Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to BTR. BTR?
Hey, greetings to you, Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing the best I can behind these enemy lines. I don't basically have no questions, but I have a statement. But I want to let Mr. Genie know that he on a network that was built by one of them light-skinned black folks, who is also a descendant of people that was classified in the census as mulatto before it changed to black, never Negro, and living in one of the freest black communities, you know, if you want to consider some of my ancestors black people, but, you know, where as soon as people got out of slavery in this county, in this area, former enslaved black people could own land, and a black man who was kidnapped at 16 years old, sold in South Carolina after the Civil War, moved here to Mount Holly, North Carolina, bought land, started businesses, founded a community of farmers for former descendants. But all of that was made possible by the mulattoes that you call them, that's undermining black folks. And let me close out with this. As a person who do read a lot and would consider myself an amateur historian, it is not right to demonize people like A. Philip Randolph, who was the head of the Black Railroad Portman Association, where he was organizing black labor. Everybody was working for white folks, and the majority of us work for white folks today. But for Garvey at that time to say black folks don't deserve to pay the same price, that black folks don't deserve to ride in the first car or the, what they call it, first class coach, where they was putting our people, like, treating them like livestock, but they paying the same price as the white people. And he said that, that black folks shouldn't have to pay, shouldn't have to ride in the first coach because they didn't build the railroad. With him being an immigrant, I'm going to blame it on his ignorance and not knowing all the inventions that black men, some of them free, some of them were formerly enslaved, invented that make the railroads go in advance and our people in slavery, who the railroad company was using to lay the tracks for the railroads. For him to say that, hey, we don't need to be riding up in good accommodations because we ain't build our own railroad. You know what I'm saying? That's a, yeah, we built theirs, and we was helped financing it. So, but we, Garvey, I really study him. Let me give some positives about Garvey without, because, you know, we got to learn to, you know, just spit out the bones, but take what we can take from people. And he was, the only formal training he got was as a printer press, running a press. That's why he had that newspaper that was global. Great accomplishment, being able to allow black people to hear black thought. You know what I'm saying? And it was actually, I think it was A. Philip Randolph, but it was one of them black leaders in Harlem that introduced him to black people. But it's wrong to blame black people and to say white people was controlling them and brought down the downfall of Garvey. Garvey was no crook, although when he left Jamaica, do your research, it's in the documentary from black historians. He was following after Booker T. Washington. He read his book or something because Garvey would read a lot. And he tried to build one of them schools, trade schools in Jamaica. He told people he wanted to build one. They donated money. Then the next thing you know, he didn't come back with the money, and he was here in America starting the UNIA and doing so. But in media and communications, he was a master, and he should be studied. In terms of business, from the historians, they say he surrounded himself with yes men, and he did not have a good business acumen. And it was only when he gave that speech to the Klan where he said, call me the black Klansman. And associating with the Klans did the African-American descendant of slaves leaders that was here call for him to be deported. They didn't do anything to stop Garvey. And actually, it was Garvey's lack of having people in these businesses was losing thousands of dollars. You know, because he didn't have businessmen running them. And it was only being still going because black people kept sending in their donations. Our illiterate people, not even far removed from slavery. We didn't have nothing during Garvey's time. We were in the mode of building our institutions. But it's just wrong, brother, to come on here and play colorism and divide us that way and these mulattoes and all of that. Well, you know, because, hey, I got to stand up for myself and for all my people. But peace to you. Peace to you. I'm not sending no negative energy out there because I don't want none coming back from you. But I'm a light-skinned brother descendant of mulattoes and African people as well as indigenous people. And I'm against slavery for everybody. Peace, everybody. Peace.
All right. Let me.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah, and then I want to say something. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, okay. So let me take one piece at a time. The first piece. First thing I have to say is we have to learn how to listen and how to not be emotional.
Okay.
Because, see, what he's saying in the emotional sense, a person can fall into it if they're light skinned. So let me be clear. First of all, my entire family, I'm one of the darkest people in my whole family. Anybody see my mom? People see them all the time. You know, my family is a light skinned family. Even more than that, my favorite. If you want to call it your favorite black American, my idol is Nat Turner. He was a very light-skinned brother. So there's nothing in what I said that a mature person who's listening outside of their emotionalism would take as colorism. Let me be more specific. In order to make it definitive, let us not listen to irritated genie. Let us listen to the words of Dr. Chancellor Williams, so that my brother that just called up being light-skinned, so I can understand he would have an emotional tie to the light-skinned and take it offensively. But let's say what Brother Garvey said. I mean, our Brother Chancellor Williams. This is the premier historian in our history, in my opinion. He wrote the premier book, documentary text on our race and how we got in this condition. It's called The Destruction of Black Civilization. In it, he specifically says, the mulatto has been the primary agent for the undermining of black people throughout history. That is his worldview from 6,000 years of study. So if you're now telling us that Dr. Chancellor Williams, and you classified yourself as a novice historian, and you're going to compare your assessment of historically what mulattoes have done as a class to black people to Dr. Chancellor Williams, I'm going to say we're going to go with Dr. Chancellor Williams. So that's one. Two, to justify A. Philip Randolph, to justify these Negroes for organizing and creating a Garvey Must Go movement when Brother Garvey had in, this is the Ida B. Wells Barnett, who was not in favor of Brother Garvey in terms of personal liking. She didn't particularly have the greatest liking for him because he was a very arrogant brother. I love Brother Garvey, but that's just one of the things people said about him. And the brother's correct that he wasn't the greatest businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have the best business people around him. All of that's correct. But here's the thing. Anytime she was very clear about it in her book, she said, listen, you know, no matter how I feel about the man as an individual, she said, it's undoubted that this man has motivated and inspired black people like no one has in the history of this country. So she gave him like the ultimate kind of compliment from someone who might not have been that favorable to, you know, she didn't want to hang out with Brother Garvey. I'm saying that to say, to dismiss the treason involved in working for and being paid by the white Jewish controllers who controlled the NAACP and started and founded it. That's a fact. Everyone can go and look at that. Working with Judge Julian Mack, who was on the NAACP. He was the judge on Marcus Garvey trial when they railroaded him. They worked with the FBI leader, J. Edgar Hoover, another homosexual, who eventually would go and try to and have Fred Hampton murdered and undermine the Black Power movement. To justify this type of collaboration, it demonstrates that we have those same type of collaborators amongst us today. And I want to be very clear with that. I want to be clear. It has not changed much. See, I thought that if we looked at it from a historical perspective, that everybody would come to the same conclusion. But this is what we don't understand. We got to be realistic. We still have people that walk around with a light supremacist personality and mentality, an integrationist personality and mentality, and a homosexual personality and mentality. Those individuals invariably side against the Marcus Garveys of the world who want to be independent, heterosexual, black, infrastructure builders in the interest of African people. And so in the dialogue, when I say that A. Philip Randolph started the Garvey Must Go movement and got these collaborators to work with the federal government to get Garvey removed, that is a matter of fact. It is not demonizing him. I'm telling a factual information, and then this brother went about justifying that kind of behavior, which means, again, this brother is a representative of the same type of people back then with a light supremacist personality, with an integrationist personality, and a defender of homosexuality who will defend these type of people, destroying people like myself. So I have to take a position in favor of Brother Garvey and defend him against a brother like this, because this brother's not really talking about Brother Garvey. He's really talking about me. Because I believe in Garvey's principles, and he believes in A. Philip Randolph's principles. Go ahead, my brother.
Well, let me say something in reference to that also, because, and see, that's why it's important to me. That's why it's important that we have, and I've been an advocate on this program of establishing think tanks in all of these areas, be it urban or suburban, where we dwell, because these things need to be honestly discussed in order for us to get out of the situation that our people are in. Now, if we're going to honestly discuss this, we have to honestly discuss these things, discuss religion. All of these things has to be honestly discussed and put on the table. We have to take emotion out of it. If you look at our situation historically, it's clear that Europeans decided to rape black women and have children by them to create a buffer class of people from among our own that would be used against our own. That's clear. They didn't sleep with black women because they loved them and had children by them. They did it for a reason. And some of the people, nobody said all of the people, because you had, listen, you had dark-skinned people that wanted to work with Europeans. But nobody's saying all of the people sided with Europeans or even believed in what Europeans was doing. Henry McNeil Turner, he was a staunch Pan-Africanist during the time of Booker T and W.E.B. Du Bois. And they both bashed him. So
that's right.
See, we got to take emotion out of this thing when we're talking about these situations and deal with this. Go ahead.
Henrietta Vinton Davis. I just wanted to say that name. Henrietta Vinton Davis. That's the sister I was talking about. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we just got to take emotion out of it and just deal with the historical. Listen, he raised a point that Garvey wasn't good with finances, and that might have been some of the reason, that wasn't nowhere near all of the reason, why things fell apart. That is a legitimate observation. All of these things have to be looked at. All of it. Listen, A. Philip Randolph, when he first started organizing that Pullman, the Pullman blacks with the work for Pullman, it was plenty of people that got brutalized, got beat, and got killed for trying to organize black motormen and coachmen. Now, Pullman was a Jew, or Jewish, as far as I know. But all of a sudden, Philip Randolph started getting help from AFL-CIO and other Jewish people to help Philip Randolph. See, that only goes to show what we've been talking about. These people play both sides of the fence historically since we've been here.
That's right.
And if you bring it up to modern day, look at what's going on and how they want to get out in front of things. After Michael Brown got killed, all of a sudden, Black Lives Matter and young black people raising up in these streets. So they get out in front of a movement with George Soros and other Jewish folks and pour money into it. The same M.O. We got to look at these things historically and take emotion. If somebody got to be emotional in dealing with this subject, they need to just sit on the side and just be patient and listen to other people. You can't jump into these conversations and be emotional. You can't.
And can I offer one more thing? And I agree with everything. I couldn't have said it better. One more thing. When he talked about Brother Garvey meeting with the Klan, and again, this is where sophistication comes in. And even to this day, even in this day, this is a thing that we don't like to talk about. It's the ugly, dirty little secrets going on inside of our minds that we don't understand. This is the reality of it. If most of our people, and I'd probably say maybe 70% or more of our people, could snap their fingers and their white folks loved us, they would snap their fingers so white folks could love us. And if all they had to do, whatever they would have to give up so that white folk would love us, they'd be willing to give up. Then there's 30% of us that are not looking for any love with whites. We remember what they've done, and it don't matter what they do. We're going to take a position on behalf of our people, period. So what happens is this. When a black person with sophistication looks out and realizes these are not our friends, they're our enemies, then we no longer have any emotional tie to Europeans. So what that means is we're not trying to be friends with them. All we want to do at that point is figure out what is the best decision for us. And sometimes in war, you sit down with your enemy, and in this case, it was Garvey with the Klan, and say, look, the Klan hates black people, and I don't like them. So let's sit down and figure out how we can separate so we can get some land of our own, and we want to get some resources to get back to Africa, and so that we can stop the hangings and the lynchings and the integrated dating and all of this stuff that leads to this conflict. Like Garvey would say, look, if you got your own bus line, let us get our black bus line, you get your white bus line. Then we don't have to worry about black women having to sit in the back or any of that stuff. That was the position that Garvey was trying to take. Look, we don't like you. You don't like us. All right, how do we separate? But the reason that the Negro, and this is for most black people, I'm not just talking about the ones that come out like the brother that just called, the real truth of it is the reason that they're angry about that is not because they think that you're selling them out. It's because our people are so in love with white folks, they're threatened by the idea of you as a, this is the leadership I'm really talking about, because the masses of the people, you can just lie to them and tell them, oh, you sold them out because you're sitting with the Klan. But the sophisticated leadership that is really is who's fighting the leaders. Those of us who don't want any relationship with the white folk except the one we have, which is an enemy relationship. We ain't trying to change that. We just want to win. When we sit down, we're not thinking about no white folks loving us. We're thinking about what is the best move. And sometimes that might have you sitting down with the worst whites in the world and say, look, what is your issue with us? Okay, well, we got an issue with you too. Okay, well, how do we navigate this? The leadership, the integrationists, the homosexuals, and the mulattoes don't ever want that, because it's no place for the, see, the mulatto, where is he going to fit when black folks say we going this way and the white folks go say they going that way? Then the mulatto has to figure out which side I'm going to, because it ain't but two different sides. He has to pick. He don't want to pick. He wants a privileged position in the middle. And that's not every mulatto, but I'm talking about the class. That is what has been done throughout history. The homosexual realizes, wow, I don't want them to split, because black people absolutely are against homosexuality. It's not part of the culture. And if there are no whites around to protect me and defend my sexual interests, I'm going to get slaughtered in this environment. I'll be smothered. I can't do it. So I need the white protectionism and integration in order to participate in the European cultural imperative of homophilia and pedophilia and homosexuality, because that's the only thing that will cover me amongst black people. And then the integrationist, very simply, well, if black folks go over there and white folks go over here, then I've lost my whole dream of integration. So they don't want to see you sitting down with the enemy trying to negotiate terms to get away from the enemy, because ultimately they're in love with the enemy.
Let's grab another one here before we take a break. 404 area code, 404.
Hey, peace and blessing there, Eric. My man Elliot and my brother Eartech Genie. Hey, look here, Elliot.
Yes, sir.
You say why we can't come together? It's too many big eyes and little U's. Look at the thing that this mayor election in Atlanta, where you had all these brothers, instead of them going in the back room and coming out with consensus like they did back in the day, and one person, one brother win the election, whatever. But look here, I studied the art of war, man. We at war. I want y'all to look up this thing here, why we couldn't get together. It's called the Delphi Technique, okay? Just look it up, Elliot. The Delphi Technique is a military psyop operation where they get these so-called misleaders that's backed by these corporations and act like they're having a community meeting, and they have two or three operatives in the audience, and they already know the outcome, man. They're Pharaoh's magician. Look up the Delphi Technique, man. Okay? And one more thing about Ms. Cynthia McKinnon, man. I want you to ask her what she think about running, because I wrote her in last election. She's a real, real one, man. I wrote her in last election, man, even though I wasn't in her district. So I want to make sure that she want to run. But that's my consensus, to try to get her to run. But look up the Delphi Technique. And they also got another technique called the Hegelian dialect, where they what they do is they it causes the problem to get the reaction to come up with a solution. And then you look at who benefits. See, I studied the art of war, man. We at war.
Okay? Oh,
and my mission, number one, we got to quit fighting amongst each other, man. I know it hurts. But you know these niggas just sell out. I know them, and y'all know them, but we got to just roll together with what we want to do, man. Okay? Point them out, and we use our energy positive to keep moving. But, Elliot, man, I got to be – you cracked me up on those car shows when they were talking to open up a weed shop, man. You had me rolling, man.
I'll talk to you later. No, go ahead.
Know, but look here, man. You check out the DFI Technique and Memorandum 46. Okay, once we figure out the game, they can't fool us no more, man. You know what I'm saying? And we do what we got to do and keep it moving, my brother here, Trey Gene. I love you, man. I love y'all.
Love you too,
peace,
bro.
Bless
you. Yes, sir.
Peace.
All right.
Let me grab another one here. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Hey, I'm enjoying you, gentlemen. I'm loving it. I tell you, every Sunday I tune in, I learn a little bit more. Keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join the conversation, too. Get involved. I, you're out there listening, but I want you to get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with activists and internet talk show host of War on the Horizon, the Irritated Genius, with us. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
cause I know you got soul. Listen if you're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing. Hey! Give it what you're getting. Knowing what I'm knowing. While the black band's sweating. In the rhythm I'm rolling. Got to give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Hey! Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the power that be. Fight the power. 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 We got to fight the power that be. As the rhythm's designed to bounce with depth of death for life. Designed to fill your mind now that you realize the prize arrives. We got to pump the stuff to make it hot. From the heart it's the start of work of art to revolutionize. Make a change, something strange. People, people, we are the same. No, we're not the same, cause we don't know the game. What we need is awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this? Our beloved, let's get down to business. Mental self-defense of fitness. The rest the show. In order to fight the power that be, fight the power, 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 fight the power. We're got to fight the power that be.
City of Philadelphia, and we're with activists, internet radio talk show hosts of War on the Horizon, the Irritated Genius with us. We're discussing an interesting subject and a subject that needs to be discussed more and more as we move forward to try to rally our people, to create avenues to free our people. A sovereign mentality should be our ultimate goal. One of the questions that we've been discussing this evening is why has a great deal of our attempts to unify or create unifying movements failed or stalled? Is it all on us, or is there other forces at work to ensure the failure of these efforts? We're talking about this with an honest, open discussion tonight, and you can get involved, too, in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. 32. You still with me, brother?
Yes, sir.
How's your time? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm real good.
Good, good, good. Let's go to the phones here. Let's go to Denver, Denver, Colorado. Let's go to Denver.
Hey, brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Sorry you're missing Richard today. welcome, brother Irritated Gene. Hey, man, you are striking on some stuff that I can appreciate. I'm going to work backwards here and try to do it quickly. I'm going to first of all tell you that thank you for saying some things that made me feel comfortable even more today about why I no longer subscribe to leadership, because I believe the problem with leadership is people forget that when you go to work, you have to put on a professional face. When you're at home, that's entirely separate from who you are as a professionalism. And that's why I think we get so caught up into judging people, you know, based on their mistakes in their business world versus their personal world. I've totally dropped that. Thank you for what you said to help me to understand why I dropped it. I believe in leadership, but I don't need to follow nobody. So thank you for putting that there, Brother Genie. Something else I wanted to point out is that I'm going to ask you a question, and maybe these are lining up with what you're saying here tonight. I think if what I think I'm hearing you say, through my own experience, my son's mother is a biracial woman. Things I would encounter with her when it came down to making moral decisions for our child would always tend to lean towards her white side of the family. And this would ultimately, invariably turn out to be, I'm some type of separatist is what I would get in the conversation when it was imbalanced. Meaning when it's just her and her family having to assess the problem. And I could never make sense of why she was doing that because of the fact I always held it near and dear to my heart that her grandfather disowned her mother and all her sisters who chose to date black men and have children with black men. And the father, my son's grandfather or great grandfather, is a oil tycoon. And he decided to write them all out of the wills and any type of inheritance because of that. That's a strong message to me. And I was only 19, 20 years old when I experienced that. So that told me a lot about the people that I grew up with in the South already seeing how they behave. I didn't need anybody to tell me what I was seeing is true. What you helped me understand that I've always come to the conclusion of over the last 20 years is that somewhere within the mulatto, and I want to be careful because I respect Scotty and his co-host, Matt Parkins, because them brothers is doing something that myself wouldn't identify. That's who you heard from earlier that was pointing out the light-skinned stuff. He's the owner of this radio station or a radio station that gives us this platform. But here's why I stand, and it seems to line up with your view, that within the mulatto blood, there's like this dormant seed that comes alive when their white parents or family members or whatever they are to them start speaking. It's almost like, oh, yeah, we need to be diverse type of attitude comes alive. And then something else I saw with my mulatto friends and so forth, when it's time and useful for them to do what we've seen white people do, meaning it's time to jump fence and get over here where the grass is greener, I've seen that too often. And, I would hate to be attacked by just relaying the truth of what I've seen. And a lot of what I've seen with the mulatto group, they are more sensitive to the homosexual trends, too. That's something that has not been talked about. I've seen that myself. It's almost like they feel like there's a connection there. And then I want to ask you, do you think the BLM is the new version of the NAACP? And thank you, Brother Irritated Genie, for being on. And those were my questions. Simply, do you think the mulatto is a dormant seed waiting to be enacted by the white half? And is the BLM a NAACP upgrade? Thank you.
Thank you for your call, sir.
All right. All right. Well, my answer to that would be, and this is why it's so tricky. The reality of it is, from time to time, and I have to be specific, it's not like the majority, it's not even close to half, but from time to time, you will have mulatto who is, quite frankly, more loyal to the black race than the average black person. Or even beyond the average black person, they pick a side and say, this is the side I'm going to be on. The reality of it is, in the world we're in today, and even in the past when we were in power, in general, they more than have, I mean, a substantial, the bulk of mulatto throughout history of relevance politically have sided against black people for whatever reason. Now, one of the reasons I can't specifically say to him a dormant gene, what I can say is this. Here is the dilemma. The black person who has two black parents and is an integrationist can either be living in a fantasy world where they think lions, tigers, and bears and zebras and chimps and snakes and ferrets are all supposed to get along. It just doesn't work that way, but they live in a fantasy world.
where that African personality wants to love everybody is there, or they're taught that through their Christian religion, or they find something in their environment that makes them wish that they could get along with white folks. But it's different for the mulattoes. We have to be honest. The truth of it is the mulatto is half white, half black, which creates this issue. We're saying our people who are mulatto, blah, blah, blah. Well, the question is, unlike regular black people, whether you want to be black or not, you are by definition black. The mulatto isn't in the same situation. The mulatto actually is half white and half black. And therefore, it creates not only a dilemma, but also an opportunity to pick. And so the mulatto, and I hate to say this, but I'm going to be honest with you. You got jet black people in this country, they could pick to be white, they would. So I'm saying in the context of the world we live in, it's not just the mulatto that wants to be white. You got dark-skinned people who just can't do it because they're dark-skinned. Or brown-skinned people or light-skinned people that wish we could be white. I mean, there's many of us that's like that. But the mulatto actually has a legitimate basis for thinking that they can be white. So what happens is a lot of times what they do, they'll be black when it's convenient to be black, then they'll be white when it's convenient to be white. Because they still have a white parent, and some of that superiority complex that exists within the context of the white parent, because they're part white, they adopt that, which they actually demonstrate, and there's not all of them, but a large percentage of them demonstrate in their behavior. But then there's the other side. They also have the black gene, so a lot of times they're very talented, very intelligent, very charismatic. So they can have both of those in because they have a little bit of both in them. And the reality of it is that history has demonstrated the Haitian Revolution throughout the history of Kemet, throughout the history of the world, that the reality that the mulatto as a class, not as individuals, the individuals who are very committed. I'm sure the brother that's doing the station, he wouldn't be having his program if he wasn't committed. But the truth of it is, the reality is, historically, as a fact, the mulattoes have sided as a class against the interests of African people. That's just the reality. The second question was, do you remember that?
You know what? I usually write it down, but I didn't. No, I didn't.
Okay.
Hopefully, we'll pick it up. We'll get it back.
Okay.
Let me say something before I move to the next call also, because I think now when we look at our situation, that you have people that are wait a minute, hold on. Let me see if I can get him back on, and then he can ask that.
I'm here, Elliot. Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What was that second question?
My second question was, is the BLM or Black Lives Matter an upgrade? But I want, since he said that, before you answer that, brother, I also wanted to point out something else that I've been discovering in my own background and lineage. Where this abolitionist thing starts to kick in a lot, something I'm noticing is a recurring theme with abolitionists, if they're not truly of the black cut, is what I'm saying. Somewhere they start seeing this diverse thing. But if these abolitionists are coming from, let's just say, an all-white or Jewish thing, as you've been saying, right off the bat, one thing I noticed about them, they're very limited in what they're willing to go for, saying we think black people should have. For example,
that's right.
It's been many of them have stated, yeah, we want y'all free. We don't like this outright beating of y'all, but we still don't see you as equal to us. So to me, that's a problem when we start embracing. For example, John Brown. I don't know who this disrespects. I don't want to disrespect nobody, but, hey, John Brown, he did a lot. He gave his life and his son. But John Brown, according to some things I've read, he wasn't so open to for the concept of living side by side with equal rights, this, you know, distributed amongst him and black people. He just saw it more so as like Abraham Lincoln. If we can get you free, won't y'all just go on about your business so we don't have to fight no more? Or I ain't got to be sitting up here fighting for your rights. Thank you. And once again, my question was, the last one was, is the Black Lives Matter a upgrade to the NAACP?
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Black Lives Matter, and the brother just mentioned how it happened, but I'll say it's a similar type of orchestrated thing. The difference is it's not the same type of institution, and not for that we're in a different time, so it's not the exact same agenda, but it's the same concept. Yeah, is it a modern-day NAACP? To some degree, it's the same concept. Basically, what happened is this. You have what is classified as the deep state. That's what the term that's being used now for the Zionists or for the hidden government that really is controlling the government. And then you have the Trump team, which some believe is representative of the whites who, Anglo-Saxons, who have pretty much tried to take back over their government. So what's happening is the Zionists, these same white so-called Jews we're talking about, their objective now is to create a race war. They're trying to tank America. And they want black people to fight with the whites, and they just want to really just tank this whole country. So what they did was when that murderous terrorist that infiltrated law enforcement, Darren Wilson, I believe his name was, when he murdered Mike Brown, the energy that was created there was so great in the streets of Ferguson that the young brother, Darren Seale, young brother that I knew, I grew to know pretty well, he was one of the people who started that whole movement. He told his mother when Mike Brown was murdered, listen, I'm going to make sure this doesn't die. We're going to make sure we get justice in this situation. Long story short, he told me it was thousands of brothers every single day that came from all hoods all together, putting aside all their beefs. They had been shooting at each other, and now they were on the same team because they didn't believe in what happened. So it was an incredible unifying force, but they didn't have proper leadership. But nevertheless, they had the right energy. So what Black Lives Matter was is, hey, you know what? They're trying to create disruption in this country for their own agenda. This is the perfect energy. Again, we can use black people and their energy and the aggression of these young people to energize them in the direction of insurrection, not for black empowerment, not for justice for Mike Brown, and not in retribution to Darren Wilson, because no target was made for Darren Wilson. It was more, we want to create disruption in society to justify martial law and ultimately bringing the country down, taking the weapons from everybody. So what they did is they sent millions of dollars in and said the way to destroy the black community and make them thoughtless zombies to do our will is to make them degenerate and to turn them into homophiles, homosexuals, pedophiles, whatever. So we're going to put a bunch of money in, take the energy that's going. We're going to buy off the young brothers that are the genuine leaders because they're poor brothers. They don't have no money. Now they're out of the way. We'll jump in with the media. We'll jump in with CNN and MSNBC and the cameras and present this as an authentic black juggernaut movement while we, the white so-called Jews, are orchestrating to create all kind of havoc in the streets with it, with black people as the battering rams, so then we can get anything that we want out of that. Unfortunately for them, we saw early on, we studied the civil rights movement, like my brother said. We studied how the small hats operate, and what we did is we started getting all of the clips that we could find. People were sending it to us, and we used the media and social media to say, brothers and sisters, take a look. The Ferguson movement has been overthrown. This is really a gay movement that's being sponsored and funded by George Soros and other small hats. Look right here. Here you can hear the gay spokesmen who started this, females. Listen to them tell you that they're really trying to push homosexuality. Once we got that word out, a lot of people started withdrawing, saying, wait a minute, I wanted to fight for black people's rights, not for gay rights. And it crumbled their movement so much so that a couple of months ago, might have been 4 to 6 months now, we got notification from different areas around the country, from different places. That's how we know it's true. That's why I believe it, I should say, that these same white so-called Jews called the Black Lives Matter participants in their local areas into meetings and told them, there are people that have to be destroyed that come from this black nationalistic movement. And the two names, I didn't get a lot of names, but in one meeting there were two white preachers and two black people of note that they said we have to destroy these people because they credited this kind of information with decreasing the amount of black people who were excited about Hillary Clinton and excited about the homosexual movement and basically losing Hillary Clinton the election. And they said, we got to destroy these people. And the two people of note in the black community that were mentioned from what the people told us, I wasn't at the meeting, was Umar Johnson and Irritated Genie. They said, these two guys are homophobic and that they need to be removed and destroyed and that we're going to fund you, but we're not going to fund you in getting this Black Lives Matter thing going back again until you do something about these characters.
Wow. Let's, you know, because we got a couple.
And right now, you see, I'm sorry, and I'm not, just real quick, and I'm not saying this has anything to do with it, but right now, you see Umar, now, out of all these years that people have been questioning the money and all that, all of a sudden, Umar Johnson has to go to court over something that, based on what the court case, if anybody watched it, it didn't look like they had anything that was of any type of legitimacy. So I'm not taking a position one way or the other. I'm just saying that's the information that I got.
Yeah, well, listen, anytime we know their tactics, and we know what this man is capable of doing and will do, especially if we kind of study him, just like he's been studying us over the centuries. So it doesn't surprise me, and I don't think it surprises the majority of our listening audience, the kind of tactics that are used. But we got a few calls stacked up, but I want to get to them. But let me say something in reference, because it got a little sidetracked talking about thing of Mulatto. Let me say this, because we know now that one of the biggest stumbling blocks to our moving forward is folks that look like us, and whether they're fair skin or dark skin. Look at Clarence Thomas. He's not a mulatto. You can't consider him a mulatto. Armstrong Williams. You got a bunch of these people that are darker than the average black person. So it's a dangerous mentality that we're talking about, because the majority of our people now, even the majority of our people that's fair skin, they don't come from. See, if you're talking about during Douglas's and them time, when you were a first generation or straight off the plantation, you had a segment of the population that were mulatto, that had a slave master that was their parent or father. But now, we're not necessarily dealing with that among our people. What we're dealing with is a pattern of self-hate and a standard of beauty that has been dictated by Europeans. Because my father and his father, when they were going out to meet women, some of their parents said, don't bring nobody back here. Don't bring nothing black back here. Some of the social organizations that was during the time of W.E.B. Du Bois and others had a brown bag test, where you couldn't be, if you were darker than the paper bag, you ain't allowed. So, no, I'm not, you know, just because somebody got two fair-skinned parents that are black, that's, you know, some of our people that consider themselves mulatto don't have a white person in their family for maybe four or five generations. So it's a pattern of self-hate and a standard of beauty that wasn't created by us that has us gravitating towards white folks or somebody that look half white. So, you know, now I don't think we got to deal with the mentality of our people. I think that's the biggest stumbling block. The mentality of our people is some of the biggest stumbling blocks.
I would say this. I don't disagree with that at all. But I will say this. I agree with it 100%. But I'll say Barack Obama is the best example.
Oh, I was getting ready to mention him. And not only him, you've got Cory Booker, Kamala Harris. See, this man don't change his tactics. He don't. He's still reaching out for that, what he consider a mulatto to be some type of icon or leader to black people. He don't change. It's we that need to observe this man's methods and pull the cover off of him. Because he pops them people up in front of us, and some of our people gravitate towards it. Go ahead. I didn't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah. And that's what one thing I want to say. Now, the thing is, I agree with you in the assessment that it is true that, like again, I say this not to be. The honest truth is, my family is mostly light skinned, but I do want to say we have to deal with the reality. The reality of is that there is a reality of the fact that the mulatto class, in general, has been and is consistently used for the purpose of hurting black people.
Yeah.
Now, again, like you were saying, it's not it's not all, and I think we were very clear in saying, if I say my whole entire family is light skin, we're not talking about people's complexion. But what happens is people get emotional because they may be light skin. What we're talking about is not complexion. We're talking about Barack Obama, who has a white mother and a black father, who was used by the whites to present himself as a black figure and did absolutely nothing to help black people, but everything he could possibly do in his power to hurt our people. And again, what are the things that he promoted? Integrationism, we can all get along. Homosexuality. And, of course, by definition of the fact that he's a mulatto. So we're looking at these three combination of things that I said before has been the historical context of racial treason in this country. It doesn't mean that we don't have, like you're saying, a bunch of race traitors that don't fit those particular categories. But the reality of it is, from a leadership perspective, the paradigm of the military strategy of undermining black civilization is integrationists, mulattoes, and homosexuals. And this can go back thousands of years. We just are now, like you said in the beginning of the program, we have the history underneath our belt to recognize this and identify it.
We're joining the conversation with activist and internet host of War on the Horizon, Teddy Genius, with us in discussion this evening. And you can join the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. I want to get back to what we were talking about, but let me pull up these callers because they've been waiting patiently. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Irritated Genie. Good evening, Brother Marcos.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. All right, Irritated Genie. You're speaking the truth here, Irritated Genie. And these Haribos, they are our ancient enemy. They're just an enemy from yesterday. They go back to Egypt, these Haribos, these people. You see, they from the 42 negative confessions, they took 10 and what they created were the 10 commandments. And they wrote that book that the Old Testament. You see, the Jew read from the Old Testament, you know, because he's the one who wrote that. You see, and the story of the Noah and the Ark, and of Ham laughing at his father's nakedness, the Hamitic myth. They're the ones who wrote that story too, saying that black people curse. You see, and a lot of black people believe that foolishness too. You see, they read the Bible and they that's why we in the predicament, we in the car, we curse. No, not knowing that it's that Jew, that Haribo, who wrote that story. You see, wrote it in, they wrote it into the book. You see, so those people, I'm on the phone, baby. Those people are liars, you know, and crooks. You see, and they continue to do it, as the brother point out in the NAACP. Joel Springard. That man was working for military intelligence and was spying on their own membership, was giving, feeding back information to U.S. military intelligence, giving them, you know, spying on his own membership. You move it up to Martin Luther King. Stanley Levinson, another Jew,
right,
who was financing King's, he was in charge of King's finances. So these people are intricately tied into our destruction as people. You know, in Namibia, the Germans, they were the ones who was in Namibia, and they created a group down there from the black and the white mixing, and they call themselves the Bastards. They are a mulatto group, and they are to the point now they don't mix with black people. They are breeding amongst themselves. They call themselves, we are proud bastards. You see, this madness. So, you know, Garvey talk about, he said, we got the curse of many colors, but that is why organization is important, because when you have organization, everybody is playing their part. See? It's like an orchestra. And when one is out key, you can know, say, okay, that one there, he's the misfit. because he ain't playing with the key, you see? That's why organization is so important. So we're going to win this struggle because we are getting wiser as a people. You may not see a mass movement, but our people slowly waking up, as the brother said, with the BLM movement. And, you know, they wanted to create a disruption, you know, but our people are getting smarter. And you will take the journey. You keep the fire on there behind, brother. You take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my brother. That was powerful. He hit the nail on the head. Everything he said was accurate.
Let's take another call here. Let's go to 414. 414?
Good evening. Good evening, Brother Elliot.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, dear brother. Good evening, Brother Irritated Genie. How are you, sir?
Fantastic, my brother. Thank you for calling.
Good. I've been on your station with first was Straight Black Sports, and then it was Straight Black News, Brother Kutuya.
Yeah, Faru.
What has been stated here is still the lack of understanding of the depth of European Caucasian, I used to say supremacy, but they are not supreme over anybody. It's more like what the brother from the UK says should be extremism. So it's European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, which is a global phenomenon that has impacted the planet. And it has caused African people particularly to act in all kinds of just negative ways, self-destructing ways, poor self-image, and, bleaching creams, top seller in Africa and in the Caribbean. It is madness. And until we understand it, we cannot deal with it. We cannot internally purge ourselves of it. There's nothing we can do to change it. There's nothing we can do. They believe that they are superior. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior. And even though there's mounds of evidence, a plethora of evidence to prove otherwise, but they cling to that belief. They dismiss, ignore anything else anybody has to say, and continue with their program. Our problem is how we react to it. We, unfortunately, internalize it into self-hatred and denial of self. And our scholars, our historians, have told us this for a long time. We consistently believe those integrationists, those apologists, those go-along-to-get-along. And, of course, it's been to our detriment. Now I believe we're at a deeper crossroads than we were, say, back in the 50s, when we came to a fork in the road and were conveniently steered into an integrationist, assimilationist direction as opposed to self-determination. Now the question we need to ask ourselves, who are we in Caucasian's reality? Because that's what power is. Power is not money. It's not politics. It's not voting. Power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Got that from Dr. Wade Noble. Outstanding definition. To me, it's definitive. And the question we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in Caucasian's reality? Because they truly have defined reality. They said, here is the system. Here is the religion. And if you don't bow down to it, I'm going to kill you. Imposing it on the world. Who are we in their reality? First, we were the soulless people. No culture to speak of. Living in huts. And, of course, Trump thinks we still live in huts. You know, no religion. Nothing of any worth. Justifying our captivity and our slavery because, hey, and now who are we today? We're thugs. We're drug addicts. No fit fathers, no fit mothers, justifying the mass incarceration and the elimination of us as a people through various means of AIDS and you name it, homosexuality. Here we used to be about 17, maybe 20% of this country's population, and we're down to damn near 10 because of homosexuality, mass incarceration, sterilization. I mean, you know, we're at a crossroad. So now.
Brother Hershey, we're going to get ready to move on.
Let me finish this.
Bring it to a close, okay.
Okay. 2019 is coming up next year. That would be 400 years that we would have been in this situation. We really need to have a think tank, a conference or something, to really evaluate where we are as a people in 400 years under this craziness, under this madness, under European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. I appreciate it, brother.
Thank you for your call.
And can I say something just real quickly on that?
Go ahead.
Because the brother just led perfectly into it. We actually having, for exactly what he just said, on that basis alone, we decided that we're having what we call the 21st Century Black Survival Conference. And what we're having is the master teacher, Ezra Kwesi, the premier scholar on African spirituality and history, master teacher Ezra Kwesi. We're also having the premier scholar of the 21st century in terms of culture and the condition and the circumstances our people are confronted with. He'll be talking about Iwa warrior's character, what it means to be a fighter for our race in the 21st century. That's Ababa Mwalimu Baruti. And then yours truly, Irritated Jenny, I'll be there as well. First time we ever did a ticket like this, and I'll be talking about African survival in the 21st century, specifically about what he's talking about, delineating what are the issues that are facing the front of black people and what are the things that we're going to have to put into place to survive the 21st century. So we're actually having that. It's going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, April 14th, 2018, at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Anybody that's interested in coming out, just go online. You need to and just put in 21st Century African Survival Conference or 21st Century Black Survival Conference. And you put that in, and you should be able to find it. It will be at the Blindless, again, Shrine of the Black Madonna in Atlanta, Georgia, April 14th, 2018. Tickets are available on Eventbrite. So you can put that in Eventbrite 2018. It's the SBPM, State Black Pride Movement, ASAPO Conference. And you can go ahead and get that. You'll see the flyer. Come on out, and we're going to be discussing just what the brother talked about.
Yeah, well, listen, we need more of these type of events that you're talking about. Think tanks, strategies have to be developed, and we have to talk about what has happened in the past so we know how to move our people ahead in this future. Let me say this before we take our next call. You know, because we have been talking about the development, or not necessarily the development, the implementation of other people's strategy against us. If you move up to the period of what they term the civil rights movement, you had, you know, after the mass lynchings of our people, the bombings, the church bombings, the killing of leaders in the South, Meg Evers and others, you had a mentality among our people that was growing, similar to Robert Williams in the Carolinas and similar to the Deacons of Defense, where black people said, we ain't taking this no more, and we need to take up arms. So here again, the same group that we've been discussing this evening said that we need to get out in front of this with a strategy. So here comes Bayard Rustin. Now, it's kind of funny because we discussed it about a month ago when the document, I don't know whether it was necessarily a document that was leaked that stated, and the columnist made a joke of it, or the writer of the article said that the CIA was observing Bayard Rustin, but they didn't understand that he already, no, not the CIA, I'm sorry, the FBI, had him under surveillance, but they didn't realize he already worked for the CIA. And they showed all these documents in the late 50s when he was on the streets of San Francisco and other cities out there soliciting agents. Now, it made me think about when we had Charles Cobb on our program. Charles Cobb and Stokely Carmichael was the first two down there to start organizing the Freedom Schools and working down there in Lowndes County. They went down there, Charles Cobb said that they went down there in 1960. And They used to have meetings go around to different houses down in the South. And I never forget, he was on the program and said, one time the meeting went around to Dr. King's house. So they go in there and they was milling around first talking to one another. And it was time for them to sit down. One of the brothers said, oh, don't sit over there. And Dr. King had some guns in the chair. So Bear the Rustin told him, he said, hey, brother, we running a nonviolent. This is nonviolent. What you got these guns in here for? So he said, listen, the movement might be nonviolent, but he said, my house been bombed, and I need some protection. So he said that they went back and forth in reference to the guns. So he said that when the meeting came back around, when it was time to swing back around and the meeting was at Dr. King's house again, that they didn't see the guns visible in his house. But he said that he knew Dr. King didn't get rid of his guns. So the reason I'm throwing that out there is because when Robert Williams and the Deacons of Defense had a philosophy that our people need to protect themselves, here comes Bear the Rustin with a philosophy of nonviolence that's clear now, that was given to him by some of those folks that you're talking about. Speak to that issue before we go to our next call.
Sure. And, you know, I want to say, you know, I'm growing in my own, you know, age. I wouldn't say I'm the greatest Martin Luther King fan in the world, but I don't think I'm exactly where I was when I found out some of this information. But I will say this, and it's very disturbing. Dr. Martin Luther King was around 25 years old when he did the Montgomery bus boycott, which was a phenomenal situation. It took bravery, courage, organization. What happened there was beautiful. But the white so-called Jews were looking at the fact that they had a major problem in Robert F. Williams. And they said, we need somebody who can deploy a certain level of eloquence to draw the black people away from being armed in their homes. Because most of you don't realize, during the 50s, the mid-50s to the early 60s, the majority of homes in the South had at least a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was for hunting or for the fact that the Klan could come to your house at any time, it was just a standard thing that folks did, whether they, no matter how Christian they were, they gonna have a shotgun or a rifle or some kind of weapon in the house to protect themselves. So they wanted to undo that because, of course, again, that leads to that self-dependence and independence. So they said, we've got to send somebody down there and find somebody who can, we can compete against this Robert F. Williams. They said, what about this preacher guy that led this Montgomery bus boycott? Do you think he's young and impressionable enough to be pulled into, you know, we give him some money and whatever the case may be, can we take him, manipulate him, and get him to push and run our agenda? And they said, well, let's see. So they sent, again, we're going back to the same thing, an integrationist homosexual named Barrett Rustin down there.
Mm-hmm.
They sent Barrett Rustin and said, look, see if you can get this guy to look at going at this in a different direction. And that's when, like you said, King had the guns in his house. He was not no nonviolent person like that. He was saying, we don't want to go armed right now, but he wasn't dead set against on what it would take. King was a young man, 25 years old, like, we got to get our freedom. Let's stand up. He was going to go wherever it went. Bear Rustin was the tool used to effeminize Martin Luther King's natural stance, which was a manly stance. Let's defend our people. I have a wife and children. I'm going to defend them. You come back to my house again with a bomb, we're going to put some lead in you. I mean, that's just a black man. That's just a man. Really, it's a man of any group. Like, these are my women and children. I'm not going to let you do harm to them. I have a responsibility to protect them. Bear Rustin not only talked Dr. King out of that aspect of it, but then started, if you look at some of Dr. King's speeches during that time, you'll see this whole Greek philosophy start bleeding into him talking about the different types of love. And so Bear Rustin was used as a tool to transition Dr. Martin Luther King from being primarily concentrating on focusing on black independent self-help to this totally nonviolent person who was also used as a tool to speak out against Robert F. Williams, the Black Panther Party. Remember when James Meredith, you know, I want people to see how this orchestrated. And I'm not saying that Dr. King understood what he was doing. It was clear that he probably didn't really understand how he was being used to more closer to the end of his life.
Exactly.
What happened is, he was the tool of eloquence that they used to compete and combat against black independent self-help. But this is what happened. When James Meredith got shot during his march, and Kwame Ture said, hey, we're going to go down there, we're going to finish this march. They said, look, Barry Rustin, you go down there. He said, I'm not going down there with them black militants. I'm gay, and they're not going to like me. I ain't messing with them. They said, you got to send King. So the white Jews, who were financing King, financed King to go down there. Said, King, you got to get down there, and you can't let this turn into a black power thing or a black militant thing, because they were losing power because our people weren't listening to the nonviolent activists who were being spearheaded and financed by the Jews anymore. They were starting to listen to more authentic, strong, masculine black leadership. So what happened is, when they sent Dr. Martin Luther King down there, he started having close, I mean, the white folks that's financing him ain't there. So he's next to Kwame Ture, Brother Mikasa Ricks, you know, he's next to these real warlords of black men. I mean, real, strong, compassionate, brilliant, intelligent, just vibrant young brothers. And what happened is, even though he was being financed by these others who had him going one direction, he began to develop tremendous respect and appreciation for the manhood in these men who were talking about black power and do for self. And so if you watch during the end of the years, like when they had him sitting down interviewing him about the Vietnam War and his position that he took against that, notice who he called. He called Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, hey, I want you to come hear me. And Kwame Ture said, I don't do the church thing. He said, I'm going to make my statement about the Vietnam War today. I want you to be there. Why is he calling that man? Because it's these strong brothers, H. Rapp Brown and Kwame Ture, that he has started being around, that start impacting his thinking and saying, you know what? Am I really being controlled by others? Remember, he sat down and sat with Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
He started realizing, you know what? I'm being deployed as tools of somebody else. And even though I don't necessarily believe in violence, if you start listening to him again, listen to him at the end of his life. When they asked him about violence, he said, I'm against violence. But this is what he said. Not in the beginning, but at the end of his life. It wasn't a moral issue anymore. He said, I'm against violence because I don't think we will win that battle. That's very different than saying I'm against violence because violence is wrong and we don't have the right as black people to defend ourselves with violence. So he starts saying, never let anybody take your manhood.
Yeah.
Be black and be beautiful. Be black and be proud. Because he began to realize these folks have engineered my movement, and now they have controlled me for their good. So what happens is, the same Barrett Rustin that had been leading him, or really misleading him in the wrong direction all those years, when Dr. King spoke out against the Vietnam War, guess who Johnson called in to go to the black community and start promoting black people joining the military and supporting the Vietnam War? Barrett Rustin.
Yep.
Who, even before Dr. King's time, had been had abstained from joining the war on the basis that it was evil to fight and kill. And now, all of a sudden, as a tool of the state, Barrett Rustin, who for many years was Dr. King's one of his primary advisors, is now being used as a tool of the state to promote the war. He's also promoting Israel being able to get bombs and nuclear bombs. So the homosexuals have been used as tools to undermine leadership and lead black people in the wrong direction. The integrationists, the homosexuals, and unfortunately, many mulattoes, like the brother you just named, a bunch of them right now that we're looking at, Barack Obama being the clearest example. I just want to mention this. I think it's relevant. Right now, an open slave trade is occurring in Africa, in Libya. I'm not saying that there's not slavery in many places. An open-air slave market, rounding up black people and selling them off to Arabs as body parts, living people now,
yes.
Body parts for organ trafficking and sex slavery and just general work slavery. It's public. It's not even hidden. It's public international news. And guess who helped facilitate that? Who made the call to do that? Barack Obama, the mulatto, who our people fell in love with that had not learned the tricks of history. And now look at the condition of what's happening in Africa. And who was it that was implored to get black people to accept the filthy European sexual practice of homosexuality, which is directly linked to sexual abuse, because that is the impetus and the catalyst for homosexuality in the black community. Who was it that told black folk we have to do this from a position of authority? Barack Obama, a mulatto integrationist. We've got to learn the lessons of history.
Let's go. Let's grab these couple more calls before we start winding things down. Let's go to 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing my fine. Hey, Brother Richard, is he in tonight?
No, Richard is out today. Family emergency.
Okay, no problem at all. Hey, Brother Leah, hey, Jenny, how you doing, my brother?
I'm fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. All praises be to Allah. You know, Brother Irritated Jenny, I told Brother Elliot before, you know, about Lyndon Johnson. You know, a lot of our people hold this devil in high regards, but like I told Elliot and Brother Richard the other week about the story of how he went after our dear sister, Eartha Kitt, because she spoke out at that little tea party they had at the White House back in 67, whatever it was, when she spoke out against them sending black youth over to Vietnam to die, and Lady Bird Johnson was offended, so was LBJ, and he made it his life's work to destroy that sister, discredit her. That's why she had to go overseas to get any kind of meaningful work, because this cracker was trying to destroy her and stuff like that. So LBJ wasn't no friend of black people. And you know, Brother Irritated Jane, one of the things, brother, and it's like trying to put a round hole in a square peg, is to try to get our people, even some of these so-called, and I told this to Brother Elliot before, even some of our so-called militant brothers, I know what I'm speaking for, where I'm coming from. I've been at these events. Some of the most nationalist brothers, Brother Ayrton, they talk all the big talk, big bully talk, if you will, talk all that stuff. Brother, they will criticize every white ethnic group in the world. I'm talking about Irish, Italians, Germans, Poles. You bring up them Jews, them Negroes get terminal lockjaw. I done been around enough of them. I'm telling you what I know. They get scared. Years ago, I was at a forum, and a brother was calling white people all these different names and stuff. As soon as the brother said, well, don't forget the white Jews and your so-called European, they white people. Oh, no, brother, I'm not talking about them people, man. I don't want to say that about them people. I mean, this nigga started tap dance like Bill Bojangles. You know, they got and Brother Irritation, it was a case, this is documented, back 7-8 years ago when the Honorable Minister Furcon was supposed to speak in Pittsburgh at the behest of Bev Smith. It was a sister on that. I think her name was Marlene. She was a so-called black master's sister. She got scared and backed out of the chance to be on the dais with Minister Furcon because she was afraid that her Jewish backers would take her funding away from her. And I'm saying to myself, what kind of black masters is you? You're getting funded by your enemy. What kind of revolution person are you and stuff? But you see time and time again, whether it's from Oprah Winfrey on down to the so-called local black politicians, they're scared to death of these people, man. They will, like I said, will criticize every white group, ethnic group out there. When it comes to the so-called Jews, they are scared to death, brother. And we need to, and so we face that reality, brother, and start dealing with these people like we do with any other white people, whether they're Jews, Irish, they're against black people. If we don't stand up to them like we do the rest of them, all we're doing is whistling in the wind, because these people exert power in the media, in the banking industry, and our people are scared to death. Until we get the courage to deal with them people like we do any other white people, all we doing is whistling in the wind, man. These people, like I said, they exert power and stuff, man. These people go after you, everything. That's why them Negroes are scared to death. Most of your black politicians, like CBC, Brother Irritated Janie, they write a blank check for Israel. Israel can do whatever they want over to the powers that stand on anybody else, and them Negroes go along with it. That's why Sister McKinney is not a communist person no more, because she's there to speak out against them. You know?
That's true. I would say, but this, go ahead, bro. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just for anybody then said that she was ostracized, and ultimately they got her out of the office because they got them Negroes and the redistrict the area, make sure that the Republicans and them could vote in the primary and stuff like this. They get rid of the sister because the sister refused to be a blank check for Israel and stuff. See, again, these people of all the white ethnic groups, brother, they do more harm to our people than anybody. Why do you think they was upset with Minister Furcon when he came out with the secret relationship between blacks and Jews? The minister wasn't anti-Semitic. What he pointed out, and the minister was smart, Irritated Janie. He used their own. He got Jewish people that was out to prove, and Jewish nobody forging stuff, Brother Irritated Janie. He got Jewish writers to prove. prove that it was Jewish slave masters that was just as brutal to black people as any other white slave masters back during them days. They enslaved our people. They was brutal to our people like any other white slave. He got documentation, so they're going to call him anti-Semitic and stuff. See, they are scared. They're scared. They want to point out anybody else's wrongdoing, but nobody's supposed to point out their wrongdoing. And like I said, they have did and still doing, as we speak, more damage to black folks than any other white ethnic group out there. They exert that power behind the scenes, and our people are so cowardly, or the ones that's not cowardly, too ignorant to realize that. And again, until we deal with them like we do with any other white people, we'll be talking this conversation 30 years from now. We have got to deal with these people head on and throw that yoke of slavery that these people, yoke of slavery and control that these people exert over our people, Brother Irritated Jenny. We have to do it. If we ever want to be truly a free people, we got to go against that European Jew. Until we do that, we just whistling in the wind, my brother.
Thank you for your call, Joe.
You're welcome.
That was extremely powerful. I remember years ago, one of the great historians of our people, Tony Martin, I was going to, it was called Break the Chain. And I was going to hear all these great lecturers, and it was the plan. It was basically talking about the 20th century plan for black people. What are we going to do? And I never forget, this is before I read his book, The Jewish Onslaught, before I really understood how the small hat or the white so-called Jew operate. I listened to him, and basically he did a whole lecture about how they control us financially, economically, and they basically, what the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, the way they describe it is, they grasp the springs of our mechanism. Means everything that we have to do to make something happen, to organize, to pay for something, to educate ourselves, they're in control of the mechanisms that allow us to act in our own behalf. And primarily it's through money, like what the brother said. So I'm saying that to say, you know, it's years later after reading his book and then reading The Secret Relationship 1 and 2, reading Synagogue of Satan by Hitchcock, I got to admit, it's a phenomenal book about smallheads. Reading The International Jew by Henry Ford, The Protocol for Elder Design. When you go through these type of resources, you start getting a more profound understanding of how they operate. I would say what the brother is saying is true, and I would add one thing to it. If you really want to know how to determine authentic black leadership, it doesn't mean that if a person doesn't do that, they absolutely aren't authentic. But I'm going to just be honest. If you want to know if somebody is authentically a black leader that really has courage and any type of commitment for black people, there's two things you look for in 2018. Are they willing to talk out against the small hats or the white so-called Jews? Do they talk about that in their control of our community? And number two, do they talk about the homophiles? Will they take a definitive position against homosexuality and pedophilia? And what I'm going to tell you is, almost invariably, you'll find that the national leadership in this country will not. Cynthia McKinney is the only one that will talk about Zionism that I can think of right now. And really put a hit on it. And I got to say, the Nation of Islam, in the sense that they put publications, so I can't not mention them. And, of course, you know, myself. And actually, I've heard Umar speak about it a little bit, but they really will focus in on Zionism. It's not many. In terms of national leadership, it's not out there. And then homosexuality, I'll be honest with you. Outside of myself and Umar Johnson, in terms of public national spokespeople, Baba Rudy does excellent work on it, the most extensive work in literature on the planet on homophilia, homosexuality, pedophilia, and the sexual European imperative. But in terms of spokespeople that are out front, Umar Johnson and Irritated Genie are the only two I can speak of that I can think of now who are nationally recognized who will actually speak out against it, and I speak more in depth against it. You will not find leadership that speak against Zionism and homophilia because those are the major battlefields of today. You can speak out against police brutality. You're not going to lose your white funding. You can speak out against mass incarceration. You're not going to lose your white funding. You can, and I'm not saying that people that speak out against these things aren't good. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying where you can measure authenticity and say, okay, that person right there has got to be serious. If they're speaking out against Zionism and Jewish manipulation of the black community, and if they're speaking out against homophilia, you got yourself a serious person who's committed, because it means, obviously, the hats and the homos don't control their first spring, because otherwise they could not speak out against these entities.
Let's go to 646. 646, are you there?
Yes, yes. What's going on, Elliot? And if Brother Richard is out there, I hope all is well. And to Brother Genie, let me ask you this. Do you consider the Jew and the Yoruba as the same or as one?
I consider them my enemy, but I think they're an enemy that operates differently. So they're one in the sense that they're both enemies, but they don't operate the same. I would not say they're the same, no. But they are one enemy, yes.
Okay. Because, you know, sometimes people make the mistake when they speak of that Yoruba and don't identify the Yoruba as the so-called European and the Jew as also a descendant of the European, but in essence the same beast, but separate one against the other. But they have one sole purpose, that's to keep their foot in the ass of African people. We clear on that, right?
No question about the fact that they're both enemies to African people. Not a question.
Okay. So now since we understand that, maybe some of the listeners out there understand that, let's move forward. In regards to how do we solve our problem and move forward as an African people, in the total discussion tonight, there's been a lot of talk about the mulatto. And the good brother Scotty Reed is upset right now, and it seems like he's going to try and move forward and getting you, Brother Genie, to change your mind in regards to your feelings of the mulatto. I don't know if it's even worth it for him to do that or for us to even get into that type of debate, because history has shown us, on the whole, the mulatto has loyalty, when it's all said and done, to his whiteness. And the reason why I'm saying that is because if there are 10 mulattoes, 8 of them will go on the white side, and the other 2 will go on the African side. Now, what we have to do as a people is identify who the African is. And my question to you, Brother Genie, should we trust them and embrace them, or should we keep them at an arm distance, like the mulatto who wants to be on the white side?
Brother, that's one of the most excellent questions. Wow, excellent question. This will be my answer. This is my opinion how we should deal with the mulatto. The first thing is, we should discourage interracial dating and marriage and sex on every level, so that we stop producing more mulattoes. That's number one. That's the first step, is to say we should be completely against it, what leads to production of mulattoes. Number 2, our position on mulattoes, in my opinion, my humble opinion, is that we should say, look, we don't have to look and try to make a determination which mulattoes are good and which ones are going to side with us and against us. We should do something different. This is my opinion. A 10-year time period. Because what I have found is that the mulattoes who actually are loyal to the black race tend to be very demonstrative in their loyalty. Meaning they don't just sit back around and quietly loyal. They're actively engaged in work that will demonstrate they have a loyalty to us. They will fight against white interests. They will side with us. So if we see that they've spent 10 years actively doing something that shows engagement, and in addition to that, whoever they're dating has to be a black person. Can't have a mulatto with a white mate, and then they lower that. We're not even going that direction. They got to have a black mate, or they have to date black and solely black. And they have to have a 10-year period of demonstrating loyalty. That I, just, again, it's opinion. I'm not saying I'm right on this one. I'm saying I would see them in terms of interactions as, hey, this is a brother or sister because of their demonstration of what they're doing. There's one caveat. A black person can make a racial mistake, and it can actually be a mistake. I wouldn't give the mulatto the same leverage. It's, hey, once you've done your 10 years and we've seen, wow, this person is really loyal. They married into the race. They're doing it. They're just black. But now, if you do something racially treasonous, you don't get a mistake. I'm not talking about something we disagree on. I'm talking about you don't get, yeah, how could you side with the whites against our people on homosexuality? You don't get that pass. It ain't no coming back. It's like, we have to never forget your mulatto, or once you have a child with a black person, I wouldn't consider that child a mulatto. Now you have black children, you cleanse the record, and now you can be considered somebody that's loyal to our people. But that's how I do it. That's the criteria that I use.
Well, brother, I would just like to say I will definitely think about that solution to one of our problems. From what I heard, I kind of agree with it because, you know, in this day and age, we got more creations of mulattoes and Negro peas than we have ever had. And it's extremely dangerous. Because the thing is, they do not know anything about who we are culturally, and they are going to lead us into a quagmire of total annihilation if we keep following that Negro pea and that mulatto, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I would also like to say this to you, Brother Elliot. I'm hoping that you at some point in time could get Brother Genie's brother and teacher, and like he said, one of the foremost authorities on warriorhood and homosexuality on your show, Mawalawano Baruti. If you could get Baruti on, he could really, really break down not only the sickness of this degenerate homosexual who is destroying the black nation, but explain on how it is being used to cause conflict between straight Africans and these freaks with the assistance of the Yoruba, a.k.a. the United States government, the Jew, and the rest of these freaks around the world. So I'm hoping that, Brother Genie, you could maybe speak to Baba Baruti and ask Baba Baruti to please come on this platform and give us some time so that we could learn. Because, like I said, there is no one out here given knowledge and wisdom and guided in regards to dealing with this freak homosexual like Brother Baruti is. And I would just like to lastly say this. Brother Genie, can you give us a guideline on where we need to go as African people to move forward in our development on surviving what this Yoruba is trying to do to us and us being able to move forward? And I'd like to, again, thank you, Brother Genie. I appreciate your knowledge and wisdom. And listen, you are an African, and you have shown it time and time again with your stance on homosexuality, pointing out to the community that they are trying to give us pedophilia and bestiality, and your steadfastness in dealing with that filthy, stinking Jew. Hotep, my brother. Hotep, my brother.
Peace, Jay. Thank you for your call, man.
Beautiful. Well, in terms of talking to Baba Baruti, if Brother Elliot here asked me to do that, I'll definitely reach out to him and hook him up. And Baba Rudy is a very serious brother, and I will let him know this is a very serious platform, and I think that he would probably be likely to want to do something like that, and I think it would be great for the audience. Also, in terms of answering the brother's question, And I'll make this short and succinct because there's a lot of things that we have to do. But in the aggregate, what I think we have to do, we have to create a new concept of racial nationhood. What that means is, right now we look at Africa as a continent. I think we have to look at Africa as a race, meaning that continent and every large group of black people around the world are a continent. I mean, we are a station. We are like a satellite station of the African continent.
Okay.
And we have to devise a mechanism to say, how do we change the paradigm in our own minds and how we're actively dealing with the world from us being located in different regions around the world at this time facing genocide and annihilation? How do we turn that paradigm to, we are African people who exist by the hundreds of millions in different locations and centers around the world, with about 1 billion of us on the African continent. We surround the entire planet, which means we have the power to determine the fate of any other group anywhere on the planet, and we're the only race in this strategic position. And we are now going to empower Africa to be our home base, but now we're going to make nations called Africa, or whatever we call those nations, as satellites of Africa. In Brazil, where we have hundreds of millions of our brothers and sisters, in America, where we have 50 million, in England, where we have thousands, wherever we have larger, in China, in regions of China, in regions of India, where we have millions of our people, we're literally going to clan up internationally and surround the world and protect the interests of African people. I know it sounds grand, but with the advent of the internet, the ability to communicate reality and ideas and information to people across the world through multiple languages, and to build an African synergy and a hierarchy of African needs, wants, desires, and end results, is more possible and achievable today than it was during Garvey's time. And our brother Garvey did a better job doing it without the internet, without television and radio, or any of that at that time, than we're doing today. There's no excuse for it. We have the tools necessary that we would need to unify as a race of people and distribute the talent that we have and the skill sets that we have and the resources that we have to get the proper mix to be able to get Africa independent and military self-sufficient, can feed itself, defend itself, and can finance itself with the engineers and the architects and the massive brain power we have from this region and the physical prowess and cultural prowess of our brothers and sisters in Brazil. We can put this all together, and we have to figure out how to do it, to become the single most dominant and powerful race of people on the planet who see ourselves not as ethnic groups, but as one racial hierarchy to exercise dominion over this planet. We can do it. We must do it. We shall do it.
Listen, you couldn't have said it any better than... Oh, boy. You couldn't have said it any better than we've been talking about on this program. We have to look at ourselves as one people. It's too many of our people that's looking at, oh, the people in the islands. Oh, them Africans, they come here, they this, that, and the other. We feeding into the same Eurocentric view of ourselves as he has put in our minds. We have to look at all of our people as one. That's the only way we're going to make it. He feeds on that division. He fostered that idea. So when white folks hear us talking like that about one another, he's laughing. When the door closed, he's laughing because he knows that his mentality, his Negropeanness, as the caller just stated, is working. We have to let that mentality go. And there's plenty of our people in these other areas that have the same mentality that some of our people here do. That's why when they come here, they look at black people, they look at other black folks as, I don't want to deal with them, because they're coming here with the same Eurocentric mentality that we have here. But there's plenty of people whether they're in the islands, whether they're in Brazil, whether they're on the continent, or whether they're here, or whether they're on European soil, that see ourselves as a pan-African people that need to come together. And if we do, this whole face of this planet can be changed in less than 5 years.
If I can add something to what you're saying, you're hitting the nail, the proverbial head directly on the nail. This is what we have to do. And it's something that we haven't done, and it's something that I realize it's a strength, but it's a weakness, too. The weakness, one of the weaknesses of the African-centered person is that we love our people so much that we tend not to want to deal adequately with the race traders and with those that are trying to push dissension amongst our people. One of the things we're going to have to do is stop being afraid of power and stop being afraid to seize power. What we're going to have to do, ultimately, is look at the integrationists and the homophiles, who are really the extreme form of integrationists, those who really should not be in power because they don't have the right ideas. And we're going to have to make the decision. We're going to be the ones with the money. We're going to be the ones with the institutions. We're going to be the ones that's going to rule our race, and we're going to make it that way. We aren't going to beg our people for it. We're going to seize leadership and dominion of our race. It's not a nice thing, and a lot of times we try to minimize conflict. I have to disagree with that approach. It has not worked. We have to be comfortable with doing whatever is necessary, even if it means hurting, and worse, our own people. The ones who are in the way of us being in control of our people, because the difference between us and them is that we actually want the best for every single African on this planet. We want them to be their best and do their best and serve their race. We would not get money and use it for ourselves and then not give it to our people. It's not in our personality. It's not in our character, because we really believe in the purpose of the ascension of us as a race. That makes us intellectually better than those that want to exploit our people and want to just get the money and do anything with it. They want to integrate with our enemies. They want to love our enemies and are cowards. It makes us intellectually better and more appropriate for leadership over our people. And we're trying to do it the nice way by showing our people the right information. And then, that's good. We shouldn't stop doing that. But there's another step that we have to be willing to take, which is organizing ourselves to be powerful enough to take power from the race traders, from the integrationists, and from the various others who don't mean our people the best. And we've got to do that, whatever it means.
Before, we're coming up on the end of the program. Let's try to squeeze one more in here. Let's go to New York State. Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? Caller?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Good evening, and thank you for taking my call, Brother Elliot, and good evening to Brother Gene. My name is Lee, and I'm from Brooklyn. You know, most of what I wanted to say has already been said. One thing, though, in terms of Brother Gene was saying that we have a problem dealing with race traitors, etc. And I don't know if I agree with that, because if you look at when Winnie Mandela was running things in South Africa, there was no problem dealing with race traitors there. Or if you look at Kenya under the so-called Mau Mau, which is really a British term, you know, yes, the Kenyans, Mau Mau, the word doesn't exist in their language. But if you look at that struggle, there's also no problem with dealing with race traitors. So, you know,
Let me say this, and not to cut you. I agree with what you're saying. But, See, that's why we have to talk about these issues in a serious fashion, all of these issues, and decide, because I've been talking about this on the program. We have to decide in any freedom struggle. You've seen it in Jamaica. Not Jamaica, I'm sorry, in the aisle, in Haiti, that McIndoe said before they become serious about any freedom struggle, they have to come up with a way to deal with the collaborator. Well, it's the same thing now. We have to come up with some type of strategy how we're going to deal with people that work against our better interests. We got to, and listen, whatever the majority of our people come up with, that's what we got to follow. But we have to come up with, I mean, they've been hurting our people. We talked about historically how these people, whether willingly or unwittingly, have worked against the interests of our people. And if we don't do something about it, it's going to continue to happen. We've got to come up with a strategy to deal with.
It's the thing, I know you've got to go, but it's shocking that people don't. I've read Chancellor Williams' Destruction of Black Civilization, but it's shocking that people really cannot see how dangerous. I mean, even Dr. John Henry Clark, God bless his soul, was saying that if he wanted to write a book on how dangerous the mulatto is. But he said, if you remember, if he wrote such a book, he'd have to get a security 24/7. That's how dangerous that subject is. People don't want to deal with it, but it's true. It really is. I see it every day. You know, Brother Genie, if you could, one thing before I go, if you could let Brother Elliot and Tassel Rankin have some of that great music from, like, Brothers Keeper, Southport, I think they'd really like it.
We'll do that.
Good work.
Thanks for your call, brother.
Thanks, brother. All right. Well, for anybody that wants the music, particularly my Alpha Saint Cobra told me I could send his music out for free. So if you want music, some of the African Insurrection music, you can send an email to liberation@waronthehorizon.com, and we'll send you all of the my Alpha Saint Cobra music. I want to say one thing about what he said about the traitors. What he spoke about with Willie Mandela and the neckties, and who else did he mention? He brought up somebody else.
Kenya. Mentioned Kenya.
The Mau Mau. Mm-hmm. He brought up the Mau Mau, right. These are isolated incidents where we actually did a great job of dealing with race traitors. But I'm going to take it a step further. I'm going to use the example he used to talk about the sophistication in this process. Winnie Mandela did a phenomenal job. And for many people that don't know, it's deeper than most people think. People don't even understand why she did it. And I'm going to say this because I think it's perfectly relevant to our conversation. What was happening in South Africa was why it's actually, they call it the gay capital of Africa now, and it really is. They had a priest that was raping little boys and molesting little boys. And Winnie Mandela was like, this homosexuality and this pedophilia stuff is not our culture. We're not going to tolerate this. So she started organizing the football players to start going and doing something about it. Well, they would have collaborators who would go back and tell the gay priest and the other racist whites what she was doing. So they said, well, look, we got to get rid of these snitches because we're trying to save our youth from this sick European imperative. They talk about her giving a necktie, but they don't talk about what it's about. She was fighting pedophiles. I mean, they were racist too. They were racist and white bigots and enslavers, but they were pedophiles. I mean, it was specifically an issue of pedophilia. People don't know. She had brothers and sisters walking around with signs saying, homosexuality is European culture. Get it out of Africa. Nobody talks about this stuff. I mean, nobody talks about this, but she did a fantastic job there. Here's where the problem came. The white star was a pressure cooker, was about to pop. What did they do? They went and took a man that they had been torturing and abusing for 27 years and brought him out of prison. Now, I want to say this carefully because I don't want to sound like I'm being unfair to a man who's been in prison for 27 years. We don't know what they did to that man for him to come out and be what he ended up at the end of his life. What we do know is this. She did a great job on the front end, and I'm not saying she could have done much about this because her hands were kind of cuffed with this, but the people should have never let Nelson Mandela come out and do the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, let the whites keep all the wealth, thus re-enslaving our people under black rule. His behavior, even though we'll give him the credit of the fact he did 27 years of suffering, I don't know what I would come out like after 27 years. So I don't want to be judgmental on that. So I'm not going to judge him, but I will judge the people for allowing him to become the race traitor he became. I'm going to give him the pass of 27 years. Might make me one, too. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. But I mean, you just don't know what 27 years until you've done it. It's hard to judge a man like that.
Okay.
But the people didn't have the right to let him do that. And now it becomes to what the brother said. We know how to deal with race traitors, but we didn't know how to deal with Nelson Mandela. So, yes, on the front end, Winnie Mandela did a fantastic job of dealing with the race traitors and the snitches and the turncoats. But what about the sophisticated race traitor who is beloved by our people, who has gotten old, and is now a tool for our enemies? That becomes a different argument. How do we deal with that one? And in terms of what we're talking about here, we're not talking about the guy that you can go put a necktie on. We're talking about people of political significance who have constituencies, but they're race traitors.
Yeah.
Brother Booker said it right. We're going to actually have to figure out how we're going to be able to deal with this stuff. And it goes to what I'm saying, too. We're going to have to decide to deal with it, and I don't know that it's going to be something that we can discuss with the most of our people, because I hate to say this, but in the current context, I don't know that most of our people know what a race traitor is, and so many of our people are participating in behavior that's considered racial treason. I don't think they would even agree to a definition we would come up with, because they would be race traitors themselves. I think we're going to have to define it. We're going to have to find the right group to decide what it is, and we're going to have to pick the first examples of it so that our people know what's right and wrong. Then we're going to have to get into our people's ear and control information so that we define racial treason. Then we can get the people to say, okay, we've done our job, now you go do your job.
Well, listen, I know you're going to keep doing your part in that fight. And before we leave the air to sit, and listen, before we do that, I just want to thank you because you know, you kind of stayed a little over, but I'm glad that we had this conversation, and we need more of it. But before we go this evening, give out any information you want to restate about the talk going on down there in Atlanta. Tell people how they can hear your program. Give us any information you want to, brother.
All right, fantastic. I really appreciate that, brother. I want to let everybody out there know that the next event that I'm having is here in the Washington, D.C. area. It's at Everlasting Life. It's on President's Day. So if you have that day off, maybe you can come on down to D.C. From 4 to 9, we're going to have a vendor's market. But from 6 to 9, I'm going to be doing a discussion of my life, how I got to, because a lot of people have been asking, you know, a lot of the younger people in particular, they want to know, how did you get to be able to do this? You know, I would like to fight for my people too, but I don't even know where to start. So I'm going to kind of tell a little bit about my life. And at the same time, I'm going to be doing a re-release of my book, War on the Horizon. I've only changed the title, but it's now Black Resistance to the Homophile Assault. It used to be Black Resistance to the White Sex Assault. Now it's Black Resistance to the Homophile Assault. And I'll be talking about why we changed the name of it and things like that. But we'll be doing that. It'll be on a Monday, on President's Day, February the 19th. I'll be coming on at 6 p.m., 6 to 9, to have that discussion. And from 4 to 9, we'll have vendors there. So you come on down 4 o'clock, get you something to eat, enjoy. We can talk. We can laugh. You can buy some products and stuff like that. We got a lot of great products here. We'll have some other vendors there as well. And then at 6 o'clock, we'll have a real good discussion. And then we'll go into the book. So, again, that's Monday, February 19th, 2018, Everlasting Life, 9185 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. I'll be starting up my radio program again on Everlasting Life. If you use Facebook, you can watch it live. Irritated Genius Southeast page. I always Facebook it live. Again, that's Irritated Genius Southeast Facebook page. You can always see it live. We're starting back up in February with the radio program. And then in April, the big event. This is the event I would tell everybody, go ahead, go online, buy your ticket. When you hear if you're not familiar with Baba Baruti, let me say it again. We had Dr. Amos Wilson. We had Dr. John Henry Clark. We had Dr. Yosef Benyakinen. We had Dr. Chancellor Williams. We had people that Dr. Francis Chris Welsing. So many greats. I can't name them all. Dr. Bobby Wright, that did literature that was life-changing. Dr. Dale Jones, one of my papas there in terms of a study. He's one of the landmine giants that we don't talk enough about right there from Philadelphia. Dr. Chakamusa Burashango. Well, in today's environment, I would say that I don't think we have the plethora and quality of scholars in terms of math that we had in the past. But I'll tell you this. We have one brother who is a giant scholastically, who there's nobody in this time that can touch. And he is reminiscent of the same ilk of greatness
of those of the past, and his name is Dr. Mwalimu Baruti. Baba Mwalimu Baruti is somebody you got to hear, and we'll try to see if Brother Booker wants to have him on the program. We'll try to make that happen.
Good.
You are going to gain tremendous insight from this brother. It's going to be him, Baba Kwesi, who's, you know, doesn't need any introduction, the master teacher. Anytime you get the name the master teacher, that tells you something. We're going to be doing a conference, Irritated Genie, yours truly. We're going to be doing a conference on, is basically the State of the Race Conference, but it's about, it's for those who are very serious and want to know what is the rollout plan and strategy of what we're going to do. Baba Kwesi is going to be talking about African history and spirituality, the origins of the Bible and the Quran. So he's going to be bringing us in and say, let's look at our own spirituality and how it's, you know, how it's come into these other religious systems, but how the core of it is all about our people, how we can get back to our own spiritual story and understanding so that we can work together. Baba Baruti is going to be talking about culture and specifically Iwa, a warrior's character. What does it mean to be a person who fights for your people in this time? What does it mean psychologically? What does it mean you're supposed to be doing physically? How are you supposed to be spending your time? How are you supposed to be raising your children? Very practical, realistic things that we need to do. And then Irritated Genie is going to be talking about African survival in the 21st century and beyond. How are we going to survive the major imperatives of the three platforms of poisoning our people through various means, pushing sexual insanity on various means, and the integrationism and miscegenation and just depleting our melanin by integrated dating and making babies of other races with other races, the three main platforms. How are we going to survive the 21st century and develop ourselves as African people? So this is a major State of the Race conference. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be Saturday, April 14th, 2018. Again, that's Saturday, April 14th, 2018. It'll start at 12 p.m. Noon, and then we're going to go to 8 o'clock. We're going to have three of those speakers, and we have a lot of people where you can shop. We're going to have good food. You're just going to have a wonderful time, good music, everything. Come on out to that. It's going to be at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. For all three of those brothers, I mean, literally for less than $15 speakers, $40 right now, you can get your ticket and come on out there and do it. You go to Eventbrite and put in 2018 SBPM, which is Straight Black Pride Movement, ASAFO Conference, A-S-A-F-O. That's A-S-A, F as in Frank, O, ASAFO Conference. ASAFO means warrior. So it's the 2018 Straight Black Pride Movement, ASAFO Conference, in Atlanta at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. It's going to be jam-packed. Get your tickets now. You're really going to appreciate this. This is serious dialogue for 21st century African survival. If you're interested in getting any of the DVDs that we do, particularly the one the brother's been speaking of, our brother Body Shots did, called The Secret Relationship Between Black Leaders and Small Hats, you go to warontthehorizon.com. You go into our store, and you can either purchase it by email. You know, you can purchase it where we send it to you by email. You get it within 24 hours, or you can order it through the mail and get it as a physical hard copy DVD and watch it at home. Phenomenal piece of work. And also liberation@warontthehorizon.com. Again, that's liberation@warontthehorizon.com is our email address. If you want to be on our email list to know any of the events that we're doing and follow us, you can send an email there. Also, on Facebook, it's Irritated Genie of Southeast. That's Irritated Genie, and Southeast is S-O-U-F-E-E-S-E. That's my name. You can follow there where we give a lot of information like what we're talking about today and keep people informed of what's going on and also know about any of our events. You get direct links to any of our events that you can pay for them and order your tickets in advance. Pretty much, I think that's pretty much it, and I want to really thank you for this opportunity to share with your esteemed listening audience, brother, and you're very much appreciating the great work that you're doing, and we want to encourage you to keep doing the great work that you've been doing and you're going to continue to do.
Listen, I'll be in touch, and I'm going to get that contact for you from you, from Dr. Baruti. And also, I want you to send me some of that music I can share with our listening audience.
Yes, sir. Done deal.
And tell Dr. Baruti that I said hello down there. I see his platform is building.
Yes, absolutely. Doing a great thing down here at Everlasting Life. No
great,
question.
Great, great. We'll talk soon, man.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you, brother.
Peace.
All right. Be with you.
We'll be right back to kind of wind things down.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Darkness no longer, a child is born. Mother shed tears of joy as baby tests his lungs. My dad is not there where he ought to be. Somewhere in Georgia, skinning and shooting craps on his knees. Another victim born out here in the hood. And based on statistics, it really ain't all good. Welfare takes the tab, and that it can't sign, and it can't be seen, the family becomes a crime. The hunt is on, and brother, you're the prey. Serving time in jail, it just ain't the way. I'm living so hard, babe, that my hair's gray. We got to make a change, it's a brand new day.
It's a new day.
A change of mind for the human race.
It's a new day.
A new order, a brand new day.
It's a new day.
A change of mind for the human race. Operation in flux, and it's on the way. We just marched a million plus the other day. Look, look, we all witnessed the sweat. Rolling down Miss Liberty's hand. She knows the sleeping giant. She's no longer sleeping dead. Oh, what a fulfillment of prophecy. Let us teach the children freedom's never been free. It's okay to cry, go ahead and cry. Cause Jesus wept, but hope and faith be kept. It's a new day.
World order, a brand new day.
It's a change
of mind for the human race.
It's a new
world order, a brand new day.
It's
a change of mind for the human race.
The die has been cast, and there's no need to fear. Cause people, the answer to your prayers are here. Sister Mary, don't you weep. Tell Martha not to moan. We need the love, and that is coming home. There's no need to worry. The times dictate a plan. Mother Earth has given birth to a brand new man. Sister, I know you're misunderstood, but hold on to your man. Cause the future looks good. It's a new day.
A new world order. A brand new day.
It's a new
change of mind.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank our guest this evening and spend some time with us, activists and internet radio hosts of war on the horizon. Brother Irritated Genie was with us this evening. Lively discussion. And I think a needed discussion. These issues about our experiences here and what has happened to our people and what will continue to happen if we don't do anything about it. These discussions, and some of them difficult, is going to have to be had. Religion also. You know, I'm not afraid to talk about that, and those discussions are going to come up on this program, and we're going to have people here talking about it. Religion, subjects dealing with religion and our people's symbiotic attachment to Europeanized religion since we've been here will be up for discussion along with these other topics. They're difficult discussions for some people, but these issues can't be taken personally because our people haven't suffered this stuff personally. This has been a generational thing that has happened to all of our people. We have to look at discussions on these things and develop strategies so they don't keep happening. It might be uncomfortable, but we have to deal with it. If I can't join in the solution with these topics, then maybe it'd be best to take the emotion out of it and just sit and listen to some of the things being said and then take a perspective of whether these things have been hurting our people or whether they've been helpful to our people. Then if you reach an intelligent decision, then maybe we can all come up with solutions to these problems as a whole. Because they are problems. And if we don't, and again, if we don't come up with a solution with them, they'll keep happening. Some of the main leaders now that they want to wave in front of us. We just had one that left office after 8 years, Barack Obama. You got two now, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris. This man's formula for dealing with black people don't really change. The faces might change somewhat, but his approach does not change. But how we respond to it needs to start changing. And we won't respond to it any differently unless we talk about these things from a historical perspective and develop new strategies and new approaches to how we're going to deal with it. Has to be done. It has to be done. The week starts out tomorrow with African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. 11 to 1 on Mondays, Brother Oshie's program, African Perspective. Catch it on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday. Sister POC is back with Revive Wednesday evening. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. I'm jumping all the way to Wednesday. Hold it. Hold it. Let's go back. Let's backtrack. because they broadcast the program last week streaming live on Time for an Awakening after Brother Oshie's program on Monday mornings, 11 to 1 p.m. Monday evening, Let's Buy Black365.com Connect will be live again on Time for Awakening at 8 p.m. Just tune into the website, Time for Awakening, and you can watch it streaming live straight from the website. Last week was the first week that they did it, and look like all the bugs have been worked out. So tomorrow evening, after you listen to Brother Oshie in the morning and take a little break after your dinner, go to timeforawakening.com and watch Let's Buy Black365.com Connect at 8 p.m. Monday evening. On Wednesday, now I'm back in order. On Wednesday, Revive is back with Sister POC Wednesday evening, 8 to 10. On Thursday, Us Lifting Us, a Black Economic Development Program, is on Thursday evening, 9 to 11. On Friday, Time for Awakening is back. Friday at 7 in the evening. On Saturday, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy, Brother Troy Wilmore, is on 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, it starts all over again with Revive Sunday morning from 11 to 1 and Time for Awakening back Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.